Good morning. I'd like to call the opening of the bids meeting to order. The first order of business, letter of notification. Gentlemen, certified proofs of publication have been received in the Office of Mineral Resources on behalf of the State Mineral and Energy Board for the State of Louisiana from the Advocate, official journal for the State of Louisiana, and from respective parish journals as evidence that tract numbers 42125 through 42203 have been advertised in accordance with and under the provisions of Chapter 2, Title 30 of the Revised Statutes of 1950 as amended. Letters of protest. We have one letter of protest from Mary Lynch Corville and Zoe Segura Lynch Ayers, dated June 2, 2011, on tract number 42180. The staff has reviewed this protest, and the tract will remain up. There will be no tracts recommended to be withdrawn from today's sale, and we will proceed with the opening of the bids. Thank you.
Let's see how I do. Right.
Showing one bid, but there's really two bids. Okay.
Yeah, they're not competitive because they're both by the same company.
Okay.
Good morning. We did not receive any bids on tracts 42125 through 42130. We did receive two bids on track 42131, advertised as 2,401.49 acres.
Okay.
I'll just take one at a time. The first bid is for a portion containing 598.8 acres. The bidder is Success Energy, LLC. Success Energy, LLC. The bid is for a 5-year primary term with a cash payment of $128,742. $128,742. Or a per acre value of $215. Annual rentals are $64,371. $64,371. Royalties are 22%. The second bid on track 42131 is for a portion containing 45 acres. The bidder is Success Energy, LLC. Success Energy, LLC. The bid is for a 5-year primary term with a cash payment of $23,175. $23,175, or a per acre value of $515. Annual rentals are $11,587.50. $11,587.50. Royalties are 22%.
Thank you, Chair.
We received one bid on track 42132, advertised as 48 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $14,400. $14,400, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $7,200. $7,200. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42133, advertised as 14 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $4,200. $4,200, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $2,100. $2,100. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42134, advertised as 50 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $15,000. $15,000, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $7,500. $7,500. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42135, advertised as 42 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $12,600. $12,600, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $6,300. $6,300. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42136, advertised as 21 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $6,300. $6,300, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $3,150. $3,150. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42137, advertised as 53 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $15,900. $15,900, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $7,950. $7,950. Royalties are 20%. We received two bids on track 42138, advertised as 44 acres. The first bid is for the entire track. The bidder is CS Tax Properties, LLC. CS Tax Properties, LLC. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $14,388. $14,388, or a per acre value of $327. Annual rentals are $7,194. $7,194. Royalties are 20%. The second bid on track 42138 is for a portion containing 7 acres. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $2,100. $2,100, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $1,050. $1,050. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42139, advertised as 39 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $11,700. $11,700, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $5,850. $5,850. Royalties are 20%. We did not receive any bids on track 42140. We did receive one bid on track 42141, advertised as 33 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $9,900. $9,900, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $4,950. $4,950. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42142, advertised as 48 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 6 acres. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $1,800. $1,800, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $9,000. I'm sorry, correction. Annual rentals are $900. $900. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42143, advertised as 36 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $10,800. $10,800. Or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $5,400. $5,400. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42144, advertised as 48 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $14,400. $14,400, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $7,200. $7,200. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42145, advertised as 72 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $21,600. $21,600, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $10,800. $10,800. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42146, advertised as 94 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $28,200. $28,200, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $14,100. $14,100. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42147, advertised as 48 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $14,400. $14,400. Or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $7,200. $7,200. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42148, advertised as 103 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $30,900. $30,900, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $15,450. $15,450. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42149, advertised as 58 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $17,400. $17,400. Or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $8,700. $8,700. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42150, advertised as 81 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $24,300. $24,300, or a per acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $12,150. $12,150. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42151, advertised as 74 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $22,200. $22,200, or a per-acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $11,100. $11,100. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42152, advertised as 56 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 15 acres. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $4,500. $4,500. Or a per-acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $2,250. $2,250. Royalties are 20%. We received one bid on track 42153, advertised as 99 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $29,700. $29,700. Or a per-acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $14,850. $14,850. Royalties are 20%. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42154, 55, or 56. We did receive one bid on track 42157, advertises 110 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. T.S. Dudley Land Company, Inc. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $33,000. $33,000. Or a per-acre value of $300. Annual rentals are $16,500. $16,500. Royalties are 20%. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42158, 59, or 60. We did receive one bid on track 42161, advertises 129 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Shelby Energy Holdings, LLC. Shelby Energy Holdings, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $32,250. $32,250, or a per-acre value of $250. Annual rentals are $16,125. $16,125. Royalties are 22%. We received one bid on track 42162. Advertised as 2 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Carla Petroleum, Inc. Carla Petroleum, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $2,002. $2,002. Or a per acre value of $1,001. Annual rentals are $1,001. $1,001. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42163, advertised as 16 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Pride Oil and Gas Properties, Inc. Pride Oil and Gas Properties, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $4,032. $4,032, or a per acre value of $252. Annual rentals are $2,016. $2,016. Royalties are 22.5%. We did not receive any bids on track 42164. We did receive one bid on track 42165, advertised as 27 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Orbit Energy, Inc. Orbit Energy, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $13,500. $13,500, or a per acre value of $500. Annual rentals are $6,750. $6,750. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42166, advertised as 27 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Merit Energy Services, LLC. Merit Energy Services, LLC. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $8,309.79, $8,309.79, or a per acre value of $307.77. Annual rentals are $4,154.90, $4,154.90. Royalties are 25%. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42167, 68, or 69. We did receive one bid on track 42170, advertised as 7 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Orbit Energy, Inc. Orbit Energy, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $4,592, $4,592, or a per acre value of $656. Annual rentals are $2,296, $2,296. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42171, advertised as 62 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is New Century Exploration, Inc. New Century Exploration, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $18,662. $18,662, or a per acre value of $301. Annual rentals are $9,331. $9,331. Royalties are 25%. As additional consideration, this is a renomination of the recently released portion of State Lease 20261 that was lost because of non-payment of rentals due to clerical oversight. New Century has adjacent production. The remaining portion of State Lease 20261 is HBP to track number 42171 and has future exploration plans for this area during the primary term of this lease. We received one bid on track 42172, advertised as 834 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 77 acres. The bidder is Pride Oil and Gas Properties, Inc. Pride Oil and Gas Properties, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $31,724. $31,724, or a per acre value of $412. Annual rentals are $15,862. $15,862. Royalties are 22.5%. As additional consideration, 10% leasing fee, $3,172.40. $20 per acre payment equals to $1,540. I know, but I still have to read it.
Okay.
What's the next one? This one. 76. We did not receive any bids on tracks 421-73, 74, or 75. We did receive one bid on track 42176, advertised as 74 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 21 acres. The bidder is Smith Production Company of Mississippi. Smith Production Company of Mississippi. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $6,321. $6,321. Or a per acre value of $301. Annual rentals are $3,160.50. $3,160.50. Royalties are 23%. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42177 or 78. We did receive one bid on track 42179, advertised as 201 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 85 acres. The bidder is Allen and Kermsey Limited. Allen and Kermsey Limited. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $22,695. $22,695. Or a per acre value of $267. Annual rentals are $11,347.50. $11,347.50. Royalties are 23%. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42180 or 42181. We did receive one bid on track 42182, advertised as 0.454 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Hillcore Energy One LP. Hillcore Energy One LP. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $175.24. $175.24. Or a per acre value of $386. Annual rentals are $87.62. $87.62. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42183, advertised as 0.253 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Hillcore Energy One LP. Hillcore Energy One LP. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $97.66. $97.66, or a per acre value of $386. Annual rentals are $48.83. $48.83. Royalties are 25%. We received two bids on track 42184, advertised as 202 acres. The first bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Matador Resources Company. Matador Resources Company. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $1,861,632. $1,861,632. Or a per acre value of $9,216. Annual rentals are $930,816. $930,816. Royalties are 25%. The second bid on track 42184 is for the entire track. The bidder is Classic Petroleum, Inc. Classic Petroleum, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $1,263,914. $1,263,914, or a per acre value of $6,257. Annual rentals are $631,957. $631,957. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42185, advertised as 26.92 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Classic Petroleum, Inc. Classic Petroleum, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $101,138.44. $101,138.44. Or a per acre value of $3,757. Annual rentals are $50,569.22. $50,569.22. Royalties are 25%. We received two bids on track 42186, advertised as 10.12 acres. The first bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Classic Petroleum, Inc. Classic Petroleum, Inc. The bid is for a 3-year primary term with a cash payment of $12,720.84. $12,720.84. Or a per acre value of $1,257. Annual rentals are $6,360.42. $6,360.42. Royalties are 25%. The second bid on track 42186 is for the entire track. The bidder is Eaglestone Energy Partners, LP. Eaglestone Energy Partners, LP. The bid is for a one-year primary term with a cash payment of $22,274.12. $22,274.12, or a per acre value of $2,201. On the bid form, there is no indication of an annual rental. Royalties are 25%. True, 1 year. Makes sense. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42187, 42188. We did receive one bid on track 42189, advertised as 4.94 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is MMB Energy, LLC. MMB Energy, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $1,432.60. $1,432.60, or a per-acre value of $290. Annual rentals are $1,432.60. $1,432.60. Royalties are 22.5%. We received two bids on track 42190, advertises 2,500 acres. The first bid is for a portion containing 625.35 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $297,053.76. $297,053.76. Or a per acre value of $475.02. Annual rentals are $148,526.88. $148,526.88. Royalties are 25%. The second bid on track 42190 is for a portion containing 166.84 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $79,252.34. $79,252.34, or a per acre value of $475.02. Annual rentals are $39,626.17. $39,626.17. Royalties are 25%. We received two bids on track 42191, advertised as 1,525.25 6.62 acres. The first bid is for a portion containing 273.02 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $129,689.96. $129,689.96. Or a per acre value of $475.02. Annual rentals are $64,844.98. $64,844.98. Royalties are 25%. The second bid on track 42191 is for a portion containing 253.93 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The lease is for a three-year, the bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $120,621.83. $120,621.83. Or a per acre value of $475.02. Annual rentals are $60,310.92. $60,310.92. Royalties are 25%. We received three bids on tracks 42192. Advertised as 1,343.38 acres. The first bid is for a portion containing 388.43 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $194,805.41. $194,805.41. Or a per acre value of $501.52. Annual rentals are $97,402.71. $97,402.71. Royalties are 25%. The second bid on track 42192 is for a portion containing 277.42 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $139,131.68. $139,131.68. Or a per acre value of $501.52. Annual rentals are $69,565.84. $69,565.84. Royalties are 25%. The third bid on track 42192 is for a portion containing 60.85 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $30,517.49. $30,517.49, or a per acre value of $501.52. Annual rentals are $15,258.75. $15,258.75. Royalties are 25%. We did not receive any bids on tracks 42193. We did receive one bid on track 42194, advertised as 2,500 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 212.06 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $106,352.33. $106,352.33, or a per acre value of $501.52. Annual rentals are $53,176.17. $53,176.17. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42195, advertised as 2,500 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 61.64 acres. The bidder is Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $30,913.69. $30,913.69. Or a per acre value of $501.52. Annual rentals are $15,456.85. $15,456.85. Royalties are 25%. We received one bid on track 42196, advertised as 2,499.67 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 966.26 acres. The bidder is Casa Petroleum, Inc. Casa Petroleum, Inc. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $373,942.62. $373,942.62, or a per acre value of $387. Annual rentals are $186,971.31. $186,971.31. Royalties are 25%. We did not receive any bids on track 42197. We did receive one bid on track 42198, advertised as 840.27 acres. The bid is for a portion containing 153.13 acres. The bidder is Casa Petroleum, Inc. Casa Petroleum, Inc. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $59,261.31. $59,261.31, or a per acre value of $387. Annual rentals are 29,000 $630.66. $29,630.66. Royalties of 25%. We did not receive any bids on track 42199. We did receive one bid on tracks 42200, advertised as 20 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $4,530.20. $4,530.20, or a per-acre value of $226.51. Annual rentals are $2,265.10. $2,265.10. Royalties are 22.5%. We received one bid on track 42201, advertised as 80 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $18,120.80. $18,120.80, or a per-acre value of $226.51. Annual rentals are $9,060.40. $9,060.40. Royalties at 22.5%. We received one bid on track 42202, advertised as 40 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $9,060.40. $9,060.40, or a per-acre value of $226.51. Annual rentals are $4,530.20. $4,530.20. Royalties are 22.5%. We received one bid on track 42203, advertised as 16 acres. The bid is for the entire track. The bidder is Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. Anadarko E&P Company, L.P. The bid is for a three-year primary term with a cash payment of $3,624.16. $3,624.16, or a per-acre value of $226.51. Annual rentals are $1,812.09. $1,812.09. Royalties are 22.5%. And that will complete the opening and reading of the bids for today's lease sale.
When is the next thing starting? 10 o'clock or 9:30?
We will adjourn the opening of bids meeting. The committee meeting should begin shortly. Thank you.
Review committee will now be called into session. Roll call. Mr. Angel, Mr. Segura, Mr. Arnold, Cordero,
here.
Mr. Diaz, Mr. Ingram, Mr. Martin, Mr. Sanders,
present.
Mrs. Smith. Mr. Graves. We're going to take a recess from the lease review committee.
We'll go to the nomination and track committee. Mr. Fontenot, would you please come to the table?
Okay, at this time we'll have a roll call. Mr. Angel, Mr. Segura, Mr. Arnold, Mr. Diaz, Mr. Ingram, Mr. Morton, Mr. Sanders.
Present.
Mr. Smith. Mrs. Smith. Mr. Klein.
Here.
Good morning, Ms. Fonda.
We have a call.
Good morning, Mr. Cordero, ladies and gentlemen. Previous approval by the board was granted to the staff to process and advertise 79 tracts in the official journal of the state and in the official journal of the parish where the lands are located for today's lease sale. We received a letter of protest from Mary L. Corville et al., dated June the 2nd, 2011, pertaining to tract 42180, situated in Vermilion Parish, Louisiana. The staff reviewed the most recent state land water bottoms layer and determined that tract 42180 contains claimable water bottoms. Therefore, the tract was advertised correctly and is to be left up for today's lease sale. 61 nominations received at the Office of Mineral Resources for the September 14, 2011 lease sale are pending approval by the board for advertising. The staff recommends that they be given the authority to advertise the aforementioned nominations received in the office for the September 2011 lease sale.
And a motion and second to accept staff's recommendation. Motion by Mr. Segura, second by Mr. Arnold. Is there any public comment on this item? Any comment from the committee? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Go ahead.
And the final item on the agenda has to do with readoption of non-exclusive permit, seismic permit fees. You have before you in your packets an explanation of determining non-exclusive seismic permit fees by staff geologist Byron Miller. As stated in revised statute 3215, such fees shall be determined by the state mineral board at least every 12 months or more often as necessary. Based on the information provided to you, the staff recommends that the state mineral and energy board, hereinafter referred to as the board, readopt and set a fee of $15 per acre or $1,000, whichever is greater, for non-exclusive seismic permits on lands under the jurisdiction of the Wildlife and Fisheries Commission, that the board readopt and set a fee of $10 per acre or $1,000, whichever is greater, for non-exclusive seismic permits on all other lands and water bottoms belonging to the state, that the board readopt a fee of $200 per line mile, or $1,000, whichever is greater, for 2D seismic permits on lands and water bottoms belonging to the state.
Okay, I need a motion and second to accept the recommendation of the staff.
So moved.
Sanders, second.
Motion by Mr. Arnold, second by Mr. Sanders. Is there any public comment on this item? Any comment from the committee? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. That's it. Okay. Need a motion to adjourn nomination and track evaluation committee. Moved by Mr. Segura.
Second
by Mr. Sanders. Nomination and track evaluation committee is closed.
The lease review committee will now be called into session. I've already called roll call, so we have a quorum. I hereby convene the lease review committee meeting. Mr. Talbert, will you please present the agenda?
Thank you, Chairman Smith and members of the board. I'm here to present the lease review agenda today. All the board members should have a binder containing the information related to this agenda. Let's start with how many active leases there are. 1,807 active leases cover nearly 837,000 acres. The G&E staff reviewed since the last board meeting some 70 leases covering 78,000 acres. Of the 70, there are four leases to discuss in more detail. Essentially, we just have two fields, Eloy Bay and Half Moon Lake. Those leases are State Lease 2220, 2221, 4039, and 4147. The committee last reviewed these leases on April 13, 2011. The board adopted the committee's recommendation to grant Cox until June 13, 2011 to prepare and submit a map outlining the acreage to be released from each lease to the OMR for review. By a letter dated May 25, 2011, Cox Operating provided a map outlining the acreage to be released from three of the above captioned leases, being a total amount of 1,400 acres. The staff recommends accepting the partial releases consisting of 800 acres from State Lease 2220, 500 acres from 2221, and 100 acres from 4147. It is also recommended that Cox Operating provide a status update on their original prospect affecting State Lease 2220 by April 11, 2012. That concludes my portion. Any questions?
Are there any questions from the board?
I'll hand it over to Mr. Bradbury on force majeure report.
Chairman Smith, members of the board, good morning.
Morning, Chair.
Let's see, where do we start? Well, the first thing we'll start with is that we had originally granted Stone Energy until today to resolve their force majeure problems. They've indicated that they're going to need more time. Their problem was a pipeline that they were in negotiations for, had gone out of service, had been broken down, got tested, broke down again, so they've been reviewing alternate options. And they've got a couple plans on the table. The problem is they're going to need a few months to negotiate permits and costs and tie-ins, so they've requested another 3-month extension to the October 12th board meeting to see if they can get a little closer to resolving this matter. So I'm going to request the board, if you could, pass a resolution that basically extends the force majeure recognition to October 12th or the October 12th board meeting for Stone Energy.
Sanders, move we accept staff recommendations on both items.
Second.
Okay. Other than that, the on the force majeure list with the affected leases affected by flooding, that list is dwindling down. In fact, I got a report today I can take three more companies off, so we'd be down to one company with their leases that are the only ones reporting not back on at this time. So it looks like we're doing pretty good. That's it.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Are there any questions or comments from the board? Any public comments? I need a motion and a second to approve all the reports, reviews, and recommendations by the
Sanders. Move.
Sanders moves. Second by Mr. Segura. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. I need a motion and a second to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Segura. Second by Mr. Sanders. Lease Review Committee is now adjourned. Thank you.
I'd like to take roll for the Audit Committee. Mr. Darrell Smith. Mr. Emil Cordero.
Here.
Mr. Paul Segura.
Here.
Mr. Tom Sanders.
Present.
Mr. Chip Klein.
Here.
And myself makes a quorum. How you doing, Rachel?
Good morning.
Morning, Rachel.
Item number one is a penalty waiver request from Encana Oil and Gas USA Incorporated for a penalty in the amount of $41,829.46 billed for the late payment of royalty. On January 25, 2011, Encana paid the state a total of $267,080.72 in late royalty for August 2009 through June 2010. The payment was not related to a field audit. Encana was late in remitting payment due to the operator's failure to timely remit Encana's working interest. Encana was billed and paid $8,363.39 in interest. In accordance with penalty waiver protocol, we are recommending a 75% waiver because royalty was outstanding less than 3 years. The amount of the reduction would be $31,372.10, with a balance of $10,457.36 owed the state.
You have heard the staff's report and recommendation.
Sanders moves.
Move by Mr. Sanders to accept. Second by Mr. Cordero. Any comment from the public? Any comments or questions from the committee? Anyone opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Item two.
Item number two is a penalty waiver request from June Operating Company for a penalty in the amount of $16,096.53 billed for the late payment of royalty. On May 25, 2010, June paid the state a total of $121,530.38 in late royalty for April 2009 through September 2009. The payment was not related to a field audit. June was late in remitting payment due to flaws in their reporting process, which were discovered after their acquisition of Gold King Energy Corporation. Prior to this acquisition, Dune did not have operations in Louisiana. In accordance with protocol, we are recommending a 75% waiver because royalty was outstanding less than 3 years. The amount of the reduction would be $12,072.40, with a balance of $3,633.58 owed the state.
Thank you. You've heard staff's report and recommendation. A motion, please. Moved by Mr. Gore, second by Sanders. Any comments or questions from the public? Any from the committee? Anyone opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you. Item three.
Item number three is a penalty waiver request from June Operating Company for a penalty in the amount of $15,937.21 billed for late payment of royalty. On December 29, 2008, Dune paid the state a total of $195,699.27 in late royalty for April 2008 through September 2008. This was not related to a field audit. Dune was late in remitting payment due to flaws in the reporting system once again, which were discovered after they acquired Gold King. Prior to the acquisition, they did not have operations in Louisiana, as stated above. In accordance with protocol, we are recommending a 75% waiver because royalty was outstanding less than 3 years. The amount of the reduction would be $11,952.91, with a balance of $3,513.60 owed the state.
Yes, sir. Herod Staff's report and recommendation. You have a motion, please?
Sanders, move.
Moved by Sanders, second by Segura. Any comments or questions from the public? Any from the committee? Anyone opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Item 4.
Item number 4 is a penalty waiver request from Manti Operating Company for a penalty in the amount of $16,017.29 billed for the late payment of royalty. On April 20, 2011, Manti paid the state a total of $197,888.62 in late royalty for February 2010 through February 2011. The payment was not related to a field audit. Manti was late in remitting payment due to a title dispute involving royalties. However, Manti had been submitting royalty payments on an estimated percentage during all of the settlement discussions. Following a settlement agreement in February 2011, Manti revised the payments to the state based on the terms of the agreement. In accordance with protocol, we are recommending a 75% waiver. Royalty was outstanding less than a year. The amount of the reduction would be $12,012.97, with a balance of $4,004.32 owed the state. We do have a representative from Manti, Mr. Scott Patton, who would like to address the board at this time.
Good morning.
Please state your name.
Scott Patton. I'm an attorney for Manti Resources. I appreciate y'all's time today. And as Ms. Newman stated, we appreciate the staff's recommendation of the waiver of the 75% of the penalty. But based on the circumstances regarding this unit and Manti's efforts during this dispute, we asked for the board's consideration of a waiver of 100%. Just to kind of briefly lay out the facts, Manti drilled a very good well down in Plaquemines Parish, the KRASUA well, in early 2010. Based on our early title review, we knew that there was going to be disputed acreage between the state and the private landowners, and therefore we met with the Mineral Board staff in April of last year in order to establish a plan for the payment of royalties on some of the acreage within the unit and to suspend some of the acreage that would be subject to dispute with the landowners. Last May, we received permission from this board to suspend the revenue attributable to the disputed acreage while the settlement discussions were ongoing. Prior to that, in March of last year, Manti submitted a payment based on the state having a 22% interest in the unit, which later turned out to be a gross overpayment. And they erred on the side of caution at that time just to make sure they had a cushion because they didn't really know what the final amount was going to be. Subsequent to the March payment, they paid the state on an 8% basis during the entirety of the settlement discussions. In August of last year, this board approved in principle the settlement where the state was entitled to 10% of production from the unit. That settlement was finalized, all the signatures were obtained, and it was approved in February of this year. Manti was not directly involved with the settlement discussions. Really, the initiative was taken by the state and the landowners, who were very active and obviously very interested in this matter. But Manti was involved in facilitating a lot of the communication, providing information to the state, and in fact, we held several town hall-style meetings down there to let the landowners know what was going on, and then later helped the state obtain some of the signatures for the settlement agreement. And it's our understanding that the penalty that's being assessed is for the 2% difference between the 8% that Manti paid while settlements were going on and the 10% that finally came out in the final division order. Manti has paid the interest on that difference, and based on all these circumstances and Manti's effort to get ahead of this problem and work with the board, we would ask the board's consideration for a 100% waiver of the penalty.
Any comments or questions from the board?
This is a title dispute that is obviously at the bottom of all this, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And the settlement was approved by this board in February, which I believe resolved, if not 100% of the claims, the vast majority of the claims.
Rachel, do you have any other comments?
I have no additional comments.
The agenda item 5, where Manti is requesting a recruitment, is this with the same?
It's a completely separate matter.
Rachel, do you have any comments on what he said? Or?
Manti has been very cooperative with regards to this issue. They did show a good faith effort to remit royalty during settlement discussions.
Sanders, please.
Yes, sir.
With due respect to the to Ms. Rachel and the auditing, I would move to that the board waive all of the penalty.
I'll second.
Mr. Sanders made a motion to waive 100% of the penalty, second by Mr. Cordero.
Yes.
Any comments from the public? Any from the committee members? Anyone opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Item number 5 is a recoupment request from Manti Exploration Operating Incorporated for an overpayment in the amount of $92,076.87. As I did state before, it's not related to item number 4, but I believe Mr. Patton is available if y'all have any questions related to this one as well. State lease numbers involved are 00192, 19250, 19550, and AO220. For March 2010, Manti paid royalty based on incorrect product and production decimals. Staff has reviewed the documentation and confirmed the overpayment and recommends that Manti Exploration Operating Incorporated is allowed to recoup the overpayment from future royalties. Staff also recommends that Manti use separate line entries for the product and production payments in their adjustments.
You've heard staff's recommendation and comments?
Second.
Move by Segura, second by Sanders. Any comments or questions from the public? Any from the committee? Any questions from Manti since they're here? Anyone oppose? Hearing none, item carries. Thank you.
Item number 6 is a request for the State Mineral and Energy Board to adopt a resolution requiring all payers to separately report royalty for all laterally drilled wells which cross more than one unit. Using the Louisiana Department of Natural Resources online royalty reporting system and specifically the Excel upload format. The Commissioner of Conservation granted authorization for operators to drill lateral wells that cross more than one unit. Royalty derived from these wells should be reported individually using the online reporting system. This has been before the board in discussion quite a bit in the last recent year, and if you recall earlier in the year, I believe in Canop came before the board to discuss it. And this is sort of in response to discussions with Encana regarding the drilling and just to ensure that we can properly audit this.
So we're asking for the committee to recommend to the board for a resolution.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Sanders, second.
Second by Sanders. Any comments or questions from the public? Any from the committee members? Anyone opposed? Hearing none, it carries. Thank you.
Item number 7 is a staff report to the committee that the election for July 2011 gas is to be paid on a process basis at the Discovery plant at La Rose and the Sea Robin plant at Henry per the terms of the State Texaco Global Settlement Agreement.
Thank you, Ms. Newman, for your report. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
So nice. Good morning.
Good morning,
Abel. Called to order the nomination and track committee. Legal and title, excuse me. Roll call, Mr. Angel.
Yes.
Mr. Segura. Thank you. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you.
Mr. Segura. Mr. Arnold.
Present.
Mr. Cordero.
Here.
Diaz, how are you, Commissioner? Mr. Ingram, Mr. Martin, Sanders present, Mr. Smith, Helen Smith, Mr. Graves. We have a quorum. Proceed, please. Good morning to you, sir. Good morning, Ms. April. How are you this morning?
If it pleases the committee, item number five on the committee is a discussion of surface water rates per Act 955. It's not going to require board action at this time, but there is a presentation, and we have the Assistant Secretary of the appropriate authority that is going to make the presentation, Mr. Lou Bouillat. So I'd like to ask that the committee allow Mr. Bouillat to go first and make his presentation out of order.
Any objection from the board? Proceed, Mr. Good morning, Mr. Hood. Thank you, Mr. Bew.
Yeah, I'm going to need to be able to. Okay. Good morning. Pleasure to be here this morning and see all these familiar faces. Just real quick, while they're loading the presentation and cutting, dimming the lights on and so forth, the purpose of this presentation is to give this board an update on Act 955. If you remember, during the last legislative session or just prior to the session, we had made a presentation or we had discussion during a couple of the board meetings, some proposed legislation that ultimately resulted in Act 955. And then after the passage of Act 955, we had provided a comprehensive presentation. We had the staff had developed a cooperative endeavor agreement, made a presentation to this board with regard to that cooperative endeavor agreement. Ultimately, this board approved that cooperative endeavor agreement, as did the Attorney General. So we're here today to give you an update on surface water management, on implementation of Act 955, and to also bring to your attention some additional an issue that has arisen during this past legislative session. There was another bill by legislator Representative Durge. And during the discussions of that bill, we learned some information regarding pricing. If you remember back in August when we made the presentation, the basic information we had at that time, or the baseline information we had at that time, came from the Sabine River Authority. And the price that water was being sold for by that authority was 15 cents per 1,000 gallons. So what I want to do is kind of reorient you. That's the purpose of the presentation today. What I want to do is, before we get into the meat of it, I want to give you a little backdrop to help so that it can help orient everyone. We have water resources here in Louisiana. We have surface water resources. We have groundwater resources. Scientifically, I think, the overwhelming consensus are those two resources are integral to one another. The same molecule of water that's a surface water in a different stage of the hydrologic cycle can be groundwater. So they're one and the same, essentially. It's just that they're different stages in the hydrologic cycle. In Louisiana, we have two legal regimes, though, that cover surface water and that cover groundwater. Okay, so the groundwater regime is pretty much the consensus. The legal consensus there is that it is covered under the rule of capture. So if you look at an absolute ownership doctrine, there's Civil Code Article 480 that basically says you own this piece of property, you own it to the heavens, down to a place where Mr. Sanders may reside.
Thank you.
and so
Just as with other fugitive minerals, as provided for in the mineral code, once you reduce those to possession, you own those. Then we have a different legal regime when it comes to surface water. And for the most part, folks recognize the regime we have as a riparian regime. So if your property borders or if running water runs through your property, you're a riparian, and you can use that water. Thank you very much. You can use that water for those riparian uses. They're essentially a little spin on that. There's a natural flow doctrine, which would essentially limit those uses to domestic uses, irrigation, watering livestock, so on and so forth. And then there's another legal doctrine. It's reasonable use that would expand that use to, say, industrial uses, so on and so forth. The law is a little bit confused in this area, but as it applies in practice, I would certainly opine that we are really a riparian under reasonable use doctrine, considering the industrial use we have in Louisiana, and considering the legislature has also provided specific statutory authority for water districts, irrigation companies, water companies, and the like, who would otherwise be non-riparians, to specifically withdraw water for those particular purposes. Okay, so that's sort of the legal backdrop. Then we have the Haynesville Shale. Okay, so the first Haynesville Shale gas play well was drilled in March of 2007. Okay, since that well was drilled, there was some growing concern with regard to, because of the amount of water needed for the fracking process to develop these wells, essentially, you know, about 4 million gallons per well at that time, that it was going to put a strain on the groundwater resources in that area. So as a result of that, on October of 2008, there were 18 wells that were completed. The Commissioner of Conservation, Jim Welch, issued a groundwater advisory encouraging the operators in the Haynesville Shale to use surface water for fracking instead of groundwater. Then, about a year and a half later, the Attorney General issues a series of opinions, issues three opinions in March, and essentially said the running water is a thing of value that belongs to the people of the state of Louisiana, and thus that we, being the Attorney General, are of the opinion that running waters of the state or a state-owned resource that has value must be purchased pursuant to the laws governing the sale of state property if it is to be used for any other thing other than for a public purpose. Okay, so that put a serious wrench in the gears with regard to the commissioner's efforts to protect these groundwater resources. So now, if you look at this dilemma that we were faced with in March of 2010, if you do nothing, the consequences are really one of two, okay? Consider the Haynesville Shale. Some estimate its value at $61 billion overall, over 250 trillion cubic feet of recoverable gas, so on and so forth. Substantial investment had been made into the Haynesville Shale at this time. So if you go back to, you remember we were just talking about those two legal regimes. If they cannot use surface, if these operators cannot use surface water, what is their legal ability now to use groundwater? Well, they have a pretty significant legal ability under rule of capture to use groundwater. You have some limitations with the creation of various groundwater districts, task force, the groundwater commission, so on and so forth, and the authorities given to the commissioner. However, most folks who assess the legal authorities in Louisiana with regard to ability to protect groundwater say that those would be insufficient to adequately protect. Okay. So you have this substantial investment. You have, if surface water cannot be used for this fracking process, two consequences. One, the operators are going to exercise their legal authorities' abilities to use the groundwater for purposes of fracking and developing those wells, thus putting serious stress on that resource. Or there would simply not be development of the Haynesville Shale asset. So potentially loss of $61 billion. two incredibly horrible consequences. Faced with that, and of course even without faced with that, doing nothing is not really an option for Secretary Angel, as y'all know him. We were faced with this issue, so we're looking at these two potential consequences, looking at the various options under Secretary Angel's leadership, and working with the administration and the legislature, a bill was developed which ultimately resulted in Act 955 that provided a voluntary process for these non-riparian owners to be able to withdraw water using a cooperative agreement process that would meet the requirements laid out in the Attorney General's opinion. So it provided an avenue, reestablished that avenue, provided a legal avenue for use of surface waters for these purposes. Now, this is an interim solution, okay? So that put us back on track is the short story there. Just real quick, if you look at, and this purpose of this is just to give you an understanding of the gravity of the situation, the gravity and the amount of water that was being used. So if you look here, you look at the increase in the number of gas wells, you look at the increase volume of water being used, you can see a direct correlation there, and you're looking at about 4.8 billion gallons of water used for hydraulic fracturing in the Haynesville Shale as of May 2011. So following that dilemma, going to the legislative session in 2010, two instruments came out, and we discussed these before. There was HCR1 that instructed the Groundwater Resource Commission to study and to provide recommendations for the optimal management of the state's ground and surface water resources. So this resolution was looking for a holistic approach to management of water resources in Louisiana, and based on conversations with the appropriate staff in Office of Conservation, this study is on time to be delivered to the legislature in before the legislative session 2012. Then we just discussed Act 955, which created this voluntary and a temporary mechanism for folks to be able to have access to surface water. And primarily here, it has been primarily implemented for purposes of being able to use the surface water for hydraulic fracturing, although there are a few instances where water withdrawal has been used for a couple other purposes. Okay? Just real quick, I'm going to give you a brief overview of the implementation of Act 955. In your materials, you have a pamphlet that we put together, and it provides all this information for you. If you remember, we had to develop a process. There was preparation of forms, application forms for a cooperative endeavor agreement. There was development of a cooperative endeavor agreement that was ultimately approved by this mineral board and by the Attorney General's office. There was organization of a review process. There were essentially two legs to that review process, the ecologic environmental portion of that process, and also the economic review portion of that process. Then we developed a system where it could be implemented through our online electronic system called Sunrise, and we also developed a tracking system. And just real quick, this is the information that would be contained in that application. There are two main components, the plan of water use. That's for the purpose of being able to evaluate the hydrology, the ecology, the environmental issues and concerns, and then, of course, the economic impact report. There are essentially two constitutional provisions that needed to be addressed, as pointed out in the Attorney General's opinion. Article 9, Section 1 of the Louisiana Constitution provides the public trust doctrine, which essentially provides that all the state agencies are to protect and conserve, replenish resources insofar as possible consistent with the public health, safety, and welfare of the public. And also Article 7, Section 14 of the Constitution, it says basically a state can't give away its property. So we have to get commensurate value for what we are giving away. And these are the two components that provide information in that application for us to make those appropriate assessments. Okay? And then this just goes through, and like I said, most of this is in that pamphlet that we have that provides the application process. We have hired a hydrologist to help us with that review. He's here sitting to my right, Dr. Thomas Van Buresel. He was formerly with the Louisiana Geologic Survey, and we also have on contract an economist with LSU that evaluates these economic reports and submittals. The review process is more than DNR. It includes several of the offices within DNR, the office that I manage, Office of Coastal Management, the Office of the Secretary, where the hydraulic review takes place, Office of Conservation to ensure that there are no unintended consequences or impact to groundwater resources and issues, the Department of Environmental Quality to assess potential impacts to water quality issues, Department of Wildlife and Fisheries for ecologic, environmental, and aquatic issues, the Department of Health and Hospitals for drinking water issues, and Office of Coastal Protection and Restoration to assess whether there's any issues with consistency with the state's master plan for our sustainable coast. And then we also send it out to other resource agencies. It could be some other federal resource agencies, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, so on and so forth, as circumstances may indicate. And like I said previously, we also have on contract LSU Center of Energy Studies, who evaluates the economic assessment for us and gives us some insight and recommendations in that regard. Current situation, we fast forward to essentially 2 months from now. We have over 2,000 Haynesville wells that have been reported to be spudded. Over 1.6 billion gallons of groundwater being reported used to produce gas from the Haynesville Shale. 4.8 billion gallons of surface water have been reported to be used to produce gas from the Haynesville play. And this is just to simply show the large portion of the water being used is from surface water resources as opposed to groundwater resources. You can see there 84% versus 16% surface water. So just to quickly give you an update for 2010, we had 10 applications we received. As a result of those 10 applications, we had four cooperative endeavor agreements were issued. Six of those were incomplete and ultimately were withdrawn and then resubmitted in 2011. Those cooperative endeavor agreements that were issued were for a total of $59,789,647 gallons of water. The $59,760,000 was sold as in-kind, meaning that the economic benefits were commensurate with the value of the water. And then we have 29,467 gallons that were sold at 15 cents per 1,000 gallons for a total whopping sum of $4.42. and then most of the water is to that were the subject of these cooperative endeavor agreements came from the Clear, Smithport, and Wallace Lakes in North Louisiana. Then fast forward 2011 applications. We have 19 of those applications, 20 pull points. You can have more than one pull point in an application. You can have different, more than one pull point in that water use plan, which obviously we had in one of these. From those 19 applications, five cooperative endeavor agreements have been issued. 14 others are in various stages of completeness, and actually seven of them are on my desk that I'm reviewing and will be shortly forwarding to Secretary Rangel with recommendations. Those cooperative endeavor agreements total $1,703,360 gallons of water. Over 1.6 billion of those gallons in change will be sold in kind, meaning that the economic benefit to use of this water is commensurate or exceeds the value of the water itself. 600,000 gallons was sold at 15 cents per 1,000 gallons for a total sum of $90. And we have two others for 82 million gallons to be sold at 15 cents a 1,000 for a total of income of $12,300. Most of this water is being extracted from Lake Bissonneau, Bayou Pierre, and the Red River. As you can see, 30% of the water has been withdrawn from the Red River, which is a good thing. There is an issue and concern now when we start looking at Bayou Pierre, Lake Bissonneau, and Loggy Bayou, and we do have a significant amount of water being withdrawn from those streams and lakes, which cause some concern. And as a result of those concerns, we have included mechanisms and conditions and the like to ensure that those resources are protected. The primary thing that we look at is flow information, and we have minimum thresholds. If withdrawal of water results in a too low of a flow, we would require suspension of that activity. And also, because you have several different folks drawing from the same stream, we require coordination amongst those folks to mitigate the impacts to those streams from decreased flow, so on and so forth. And we include these in these cooperative endeavor agreements as conditions. Okay. So one of the things that we want to talk to you about today is this pricing of surface water. The initial survey, and when we looked at all the information available at the time that we were able to get, it was and the most credible information came from the Saline River Authority. That was 15 cents per 1,000 gallons, and we had that discussion with you back in August. During this past legislative session, as I said, Representative Durge had authored a bill, and during the discussions of this bill, there was some secondhand information that in some areas in Louisiana, water was being sold at prices ranging from about 25 cents, maybe even up to 50 cents per barrel, which is barrels 42 gallons. So on the high end, if that 50 cents per barrel is accurate, that would be $11.90 per 1,000 versus the 15 cents per 1,000. So that obviously leads to the conclusion that we need pricing information. What have we done? We have had some in-house planning meetings. We've had several of those to come up with a process. And that's what I'm going to explain to you today is the process that we've come up with. I want to get your thoughts with regard to this process. I want to get your thoughts on how we can improve this process, if we're asking the right questions, if we're asking the right people the right questions, so on and so forth. So we intend to gather statewide marketing data on surface water, on sales that have already taken place. We have identified various stakeholders that we want to ask these various questions of, and we've developed some electronic surveys using what's referred to as a Survey Monkey. It's a particular entity, but it provides for ease of getting this information. The stakeholders that we're primarily looking at are water regulatory agencies, so it'd be like the Saline River Authority, the Red River Commission, so on and so forth, all the parishes and municipalities in the state of Louisiana. We also want to look at and ask the operators in both the Haynesville Shale and the Tuscaloosa if they purchased water and how much have they purchased their water for, so on and so forth. All of the folks who are applying for Section 10 applications with the Corps of Engineers to withdraw water, we're going to also ask them to provide us information with regard to their purchases of water. And we're also going to ask the folks who have been purchasing water or who have applied for cooperative endeavor agreements with the Department of Natural Resources. The Groundwater Commission also has an interested parties list, and we will survey them also, and we will survey the trade associations such as Louisiana Oil and Gas Association, Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas, and we also intend to survey the folks who are purchasing leases from the state of Louisiana. The information that we are looking to primarily ask are prices per volume of sale, the date of the sale, the date of the water withdrawal, location of water is sold, and any other qualities of the exchange that may impact water. As you can imagine, and certainly nothing more demonstrates this in Louisiana than this year, where we were fighting two emergencies at the same time. One was a flood and one was a drought. So I'm sure we would have had a fire sale on water in the Mississippi River this year. But at the same time, we had drought conditions and we had a stress on resources up in northwest Louisiana, such as on areas such as Bayou Pierre, Lake Bistineau, so on and so forth. And also, we also have to note that some of these sales of water are likely from private ponds that are located immediately adjacent to the facility that they're servicing for hydrofracking. So at the end of the day, what we want to do is gather this information, analyze this market data, and perhaps what we think, and it depends on what the data comes back, but we're envisioning at this point maybe market price matrix by water body segment. And we would present those to this board for information purposes. Then what we would suggest is make these proposed market prices and supporting data available to the public by putting them in libraries, courthouses, and other public areas and hold public meetings to gather additional data or insight with regard to the information that we've been able to gather. Public notice of availability of these proposed market prices and supporting data. Like I say, hold public meetings, compile these public comments, adjust these market price matrix to reflect the public input to the extent significant and relevant, and present these recommendations on market price to this board for consideration. And ultimately, we would ask for a resolution urging and requesting the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources to apply this pricing matrix when considering negotiation of these cooperative endeavor agreements. And then ultimately we would publish these market pricing matrix in the Louisiana Register. This is a process in the development stage. This isn't a done deal, so to speak. The purpose of me being here today is to poll all the smart people, and that's you, on what we can do to make this a better process. So I would open it up for questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few questions.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. View. I want to commend you and your staff for great work in the development and helping as we reacted to this Attorney General opinion. So just for a moment, if I could, kind of make sure that the board fully understands the significance of this issue. And you might be asking yourself, after having served on this board, why is the water issue such a big deal? I would encourage you to go back and look at some of the PowerPoints that you've received that indicate where the state is getting bonus income from. And the state is clearly getting bonus income from in the last several years, disproportionately to the shale play areas. Okay, there has been a serious flip-flop in that. If you go back and look at those numbers prior to 2008, prior to 2007, it was somewhat spread around. With primarily historically, the state's bonus income and royalty income has been in the coastal areas because of the significance of our land holdings there. And along came the Haynesville Shale and the shale plays across America that have changed that. And if you take a look at, if our job is to maximize the state's income from mineral asset management, you have to understand what Mr. Buat said about the volume of water that is necessary to get to that asset. So the asset is natural gas, that is an unconventional situation, and the only way that you can bring it to market is that you have to apply a technique called hydrofracking. And that takes up to now 10 million gallons of water per well. And the indications that I have is we may, and I think we were using 5 million gallons of water, and there may be 10,000 wells that will be drilled in that area, so very dense. You do the math, 10,000 times a low of 5 million gallons, that's 50 billion gallons of water necessary in a small 7-8 parish region to be able to get that gas, which right now is the number one producing natural gas asset in America. So you might ask yourself, well, I got signed up for the mineral board, and we spent a lot of time this morning talking about water. And it's absolutely critical that you understand that water and access to water is the absolute key to being able to get to that natural gas resource. Now, I would tell you that that's not only the situation there, but there's beginning to be some interest in properties in this Tuscaloosa marine shale area that will also use hydrofracking, and that's in another region of the state. And I would tell you that for the first time, I think it was in September of 2009, in America, the use of horizontal well techniques versus vertical well techniques, we had a greater number of wells drilling for using a horizontal well, which in instances is going to use the application of fracking. So it's not just here. Its time has come. It is a more efficient way to get to the resource, and so I would expect us to be looking at a situation where, as we try to manage the mineral assets of the state, that we have to be prepared to manage the water assets of the states that allow, if you would, to unlock that asset. So one of the great things about it is that we are a state blessed with about 15% of our surface is surface water, so we had a lot of it. In the Haynesville Shale area, we're very, very lucky in that the Haynesville Shale is placed between two very large surface water resources, one being Toledo Bend and one being the Red River. So we have an abundance of surface water. But there are other uses as well for water, and it's not just the oil and gas industry, although it is a very, very important part. Suffice to say, you can't grow crops without water. Suffice to say, humans can't live without water. Suffice to say, you cannot get natural gas out of northwest Louisiana in Haynesville Shale without water. That is where we are today. So having said that, again, as Mr. Buat appropriately said, we have been a state that you drill a well, if you drill a water well, you get access to all the water you want. It's not a problem. In 2001, the legislature spoke to that and said it was a couple of drought areas, and they authorized a series of regulation that gave to the Commissioner of Conservation some authority to manage water in areas of groundwater concern. And that has its own challenges. So what was beginning to happen, as you can imagine, companies investing billions and billions of dollars in drilling wells and buying leases, what we went through is a period where getting the water where it was free, which is groundwater, where it was close by, which is just drilling a water well next to the gas well with no transportation issues, you can imagine with the volume of development we're talking about what kind of pressure that would put on the groundwater. So prior to any Attorney General's opinion, working with the Commission of Conservation, and I have to give a tremendous shout out to the natural gas industry, they responded to a guidance document that said, look, at this point we don't have the authority to tell you you can't use groundwater, but we are telling you that we don't believe it's sustainable in this state to have these amount of wells drilled in this dense area and everybody using groundwater. And if we have to, we will seek out authority to curtail what it is, because at the end of the day, our responsibility certainly is to make sure that groundwater is protected. And you saw the slide. I think one of the slides had a pie chart on it. And you saw that what we now have developed, where we had 100% of the wells being drilled using groundwater, now, was it 77?
It's 84%
of the water that's being used for hydrofracking is now using surface water. And that's a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment, and it ought to be a model that we can show to the other states in America that are struggling with this issue. We provide some leadership, and the companies responded, and now we're using this abundant resource we have called surface water, right? Well, soon thereafter we did that, five attorney general's opinions were issued, and those opinions basically said that the surface water is owned by the state of Louisiana, and the only few people that have a right to use it are, in fact, those riparian owners. So if you're a chemical company right here and you're on the Mississippi River and you own property on the river and you use a lot of water, our laws say you can use all the water you want. It's not a problem because you're a riparian landowner, okay? But if you're not a riparian landowner, you don't have the right to do it. And I would tell you that the state constitution prohibits me or the governor or the attorney general from giving away those things that are owned by the public. So if you have a $100 police cruiser that has 250,000 miles on it, that's been beat up, has been in an accident, the paint is peeling on it, you know, the local sheriff, doesn't have the right to say, well, we're just going to give that to the Council on Aging. We're going to give that to, you know, some old guy who needs a, who needs a car, even though it's valued at only $100, in that instance, the Constitution says that you have to go through a process, and you have to dispose of that asset in a competitive situation. So now we have five attorney general's opinions that say the surface water of the state of Louisiana is owned by the people, and here we are encouraging oil and gas companies, natural gas companies, to use that, and we now find ourselves in a very, very tough situation because we don't have, while the attorney general's opinions are opinions and not law, they are based on a review of the law. We don't have the luxury of ignoring them. My big concern in 2010, absolute major concern, was that you would begin to have litigation by private groups against energy companies for the use, the unauthorized use of surface water, which would then mean that our mineral development would be challenged. So Act 955 was a response to that, that provided an opportunity, and of course industry was very concerned that they would have to get into a situation where they would have to buy water. And this is something that was here historically free in Louisiana. So what we did is we worked on some language that allowed, and I'll share with you, if somebody came knocking on our door, and let's say it's not oil and gas, let's say it's an automobile manufacturer. Let's say that automobile manufacturer wanted to locate in an area of the state, and he said they would come, what did you say, $61 billion investment?
$61 billion.
Okay, so that economic input. Okay, so let's say a automobile manufacturer was coming to us and said, knocking on our door and said, I'm trying to make a choice between Louisiana and Mississippi. We want to have a project, an economic benefit of $61 billion, but what we need is the use of water. We would find a way to make sure we would win in that instance, and that's what we did. So we allowed and we met the issues that were brought out in the Attorney General's opinion by allowing the creation of the jobs, the economic benefit that is in fact created when the well is drilled, the local taxes that are paid, all of that has a value, and we measure that value against the value of buying the water. And so the compensation for the jobs that are created, the compensation for the taxes that are paid, the compensation for all the economic benefit is greater, we believe, than the value of the water. The only thing we had at that time, as I recall, on looking at value of water, you mentioned, was the Sabine River Authority, which manages Toledo Bend. All right? They had a series of contracts where they were selling water for 15 cents per thousand. Does Act 955 call for the Mineral Board to set the rate?
No. It doesn't specifically call for the Mineral Board to set the rate, but it calls for the Mineral Board to approve the Cooperative Endeavor Agreement form. And it then allows the Secretary to negotiate these cooperative endeavor agreements. And the cooperative endeavor agreement form has a place for a price, and we initially came to the board to get their concurrence with regard to provide the information with regard to price, to get the concurrence that should be what you should be using as a guideline for purposes of negotiating these agreements.
So in a sense, the approval of the form would, by my estimation, include approval of the price.
That's my view.
Okay. And certainly I don't think it's appropriate for this secretary or any secretary to unilaterally set the price. I think it ought to be done in an open, transparent way with discussion and public record. So, again, we had to move pretty quickly. We reached out to the Attorney General's office. We did the research that we could. We found that 15 cents per thousand was a public body selling water in large quantities, and we have used that. I'm not certain. I have no idea whether 15-cent rate is appropriate rate. I know that it was the rate that we could best use at that time. Some 9-10 months have now elapsed, and I think that it's appropriate for Mr. Buat to be here. I appreciate him doing that. One of my concerns is that we can't be in a situation where we're not constantly looking at what the marketplace is offering. You made the point, somebody's selling water for 50 cents per barrel.
That's right. Secondhand,
right.
Hearsay
secondhand information. And that could be because it's right next to that well and there's no other water, and we all know what supply and demand do in our daily lives in terms of price points. That may be an anomaly, but I think the public and certainly the auditors would expect us to do a robust research on this, to reach out and, you know, should the price in the Tuscaloosa marine shale be less than the price in northwest Louisiana, where there seems to be less water resources than there are in southeast Louisiana? I don't know the answer to that question, but I know that property in my hometown is less expensive than property in the adjoining parish. And there's a reason for that. And, you know, I don't know if we should have tiers. I don't know if we should have below I-10, north of I-10, how we do this. You know, think of, again, appraisals going in and looking at real estate. You're looking at transactions in the courthouse, and you're coming up with an appraised price. Suffice to say that I have a concern that while we use the best data we could at 15 cents, someone could be highly critical of us saying, okay, enough time has passed. What have you done to check under the hood to see what the price points are out there? I think we would be embarrassed. I know I would be embarrassed if we were not doing this and somebody walked in here and said, it's amazing that the state of Louisiana is giving it away at 15 cents or selling at 15 cents per thousand, and we have this document and this document and this document and this document that shows it's worth a lot more than that. I think that's not what I think is expected of us. So I'm very interested in, Mr. Buat, you taking the leadership role, reaching out as you can. I don't think there's a timetable on when we have to have the answer to this. I think it should be founded in research. I think we can defend that we had a bill, that we had to set a price, and we set that price based on the data that we had. I think we got copies of the contracts for the Sabine River Authority. Yes. And I just think it makes sense for us to continue that research, and it's tough, and there's no clear path on how you ought to get it done because nobody's done this. And whether we have tiering or not in different areas remains to be seen. But I do believe it's important, and I thought it was important to get that on the record here today so that in the event that anybody does come to us with those instances, we can say that certainly we are we're looking at it. And it, again, I know that for many of you, it's, you know, you look at the water issue and, again, ask yourself, why is that important here? More and more, our state's ability to get mineral assets will be through the development of hydrofracking. And so the time is here for us to understand water. And with that in mind, that's all I have, Mr. Chairman, and certainly I appreciate the opportunity to present on this.
Does the board want to proceed? The board members have some questions, comments?
How are they handling their water issues in the other states, Colorado, Pennsylvania, Texas?
With regard to the shale development?
Yes.
Each of these states have completely different regimes. When you look at, do you remember Pennsylvania, what their regime was off?
Pennsylvania's riparian.
They're riparian. As far as I know, this issue hasn't come to a head up there as it has here.
Yeah, and I appreciate the eastern states more of a riparian situation than the western states are more of an ownership
prior appropriation.
Right.
Ownership.
So you know, in Texas, where the Eagle Ford Shale is being developed, I mean, water's a serious issue for them. You know, and tends to be in an area that has some drought conditions. And what we are having to do is react, I think, to our the structure of the way we treat the ownership of this water. If you know, the law changed and the Constitution changed and said that surface water was come one, come all, get it, then we wouldn't need a management regime. I don't think that would be very smart, because the reason you manage a resource is for one reason and one reason only, and that's sustainability. And whether it's you managing deer, ducks, water, or whatever, renewable resources are such that you want sustainability. And it's a great question. In fact, Pennsylvania has actually come here to see what it is that we are doing, because they want to be able to have some sustainability. In New York, it's a big issue with the Marcellus as well.
If you look, I have another presentation. We did a survey based on that really comes that addresses your question. We looked at all the states and what the particular regimes were. This is on another presentation. I was trying not to overload you all. But we looked, and 40 states have surface water withdrawal permitting requirements. 4 states have registration requirements, and 1 state has a certification requirement. So that's 45 states. We're one of the 5 states that don't have any of those. 26 states have reporting requirements. 31 of them have minimum volume requirements, meaning you have to get above a minimum volume before that requirement would kick in. And if you look down at the bottom, 6 states have minimum flow rules, and that includes Pennsylvania. So they're also, with regard to surface water, they have some surface water management regime. But the question with regard to non-riparian and withdrawing that water from those streams, I'm not aware that issue's come to a head in Pennsylvania. But they do have a water management regime that they have a process to go through in order to access that water, and that their minimum flow requirements that they would have to meet in order to do that.
In those other states, they pay for the water?
In some states, I believe they do. Let's see, their usage fee in four states have reporting fees. Whether they pay for it or they pay fees, they're paying money to the public entity to have access to that water.
Important to note that was never was not our contention. You know, we didn't ask for the opinions, nor were we involved in getting to that point. I think what you look at is what an opinion is. An opinion is an examination of the law, and what surface water is, first of all, being determined is a public thing. And once you get to that point of it being a public thing, then it falls into the category of how we deal with every other public thing. And that's why I use the beat-up police car as an example. So if it's either a public thing or it's not a public thing, and if it's a public thing, it falls into that category. So I appreciate your line of question. If we want to get to a point where we don't want to charge for it, then we would have to express that in either a constitutional amendment, and that could be somewhere where we go. And not so sure that's smart, but it's certainly an option.
And certainly they pay for it in the prior appropriation states.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Any other board members have a question or comment, observation?
Lou, how many agreements did you say we have in place right now?
Let's see. We have 9 so far, and we have 14 that are pending. I have 7 of those on my desk right now that will be being forwarded to Secretary Angel before the end of this week.
Okay. Everybody else? Chair has a comment.
Yes, sir.
We have a kind of a running joke between Mr. Harper and myself. I am of the view that with due respect to the energy market, which is very important for us, so that's our raison d'etre here, I have a view that the water resources in this state are some of the most valuable, if not the ultimate most valuable resource that we have. When you see news articles that the state of Texas wants to purchase half of the water from the Sabine River Authority, an independent body with practically no regulation, in other words, it can do almost as it pleases, it is quite frightening, because they want to pipe that water nowhere, probably to the DFW area, and we won't ever have any use of it. I think this is one of the most important things that the legislature could address, and the Office of Conservation, everybody else that's in the loop. Natural resources, it is a tremendous natural resource. I mean, you look at the separation of estates from a legal concept in other states where people go and buy the water rights, which you can't do in Louisiana, and they buy the water rights, and then because the water is through the roof. So it is a tremendous blessing that we have here, and we do best to harbor it and protect it and minimize the destruction. I wonder if there's any process for recycling these billions of gallons of water that are, last I knew anything about it, being transported out of state. I don't know where they're going now from the Haynesville Shale deal. Is there any recycling possibility, or is it not possible to reuse it.
Yes, sir. There is that possibility, and the commissioner has, I believe, looked at rules and regulations that would allow for that. The number of times it can be recycled, you get into some very difficult conversation as to does then a gas well become an injection well, because now you are injecting water that was formerly a waste that has been recycled. And so there's some issues there, but we certainly believe we're moving to a regime that has a conservation element to it, in that obviously companies would much prefer to recycle it, because the cost of disposal is pretty significant, and a lot of things are working in that area, and perhaps it would be a good idea we could maybe get the commissioner's office to make a presentation at the next meeting.
Anything else from the board? Public have any comment? I think we should ask for the public comment if there is any. Do you agree, Mr. Chairman? Public comment on this issue? Thank you, Mr. Good. Very good presentation.
Thank you.
What are the industries paying in Southwest Louisiana for the Sabine diversion canal water that is being used by the industry? Do you know?
I think those contracts are still, I think they're
15 cents. I think 1,000. That's one of the
comps. The diversion canal.
One of the comps that were used.
Sir?
That's one of the things that was used in setting this statute.
Yes, sir. There were several contracts. These were from the Sabine River Authority, and those were essentially 15 cents a thousand.
Yeah. I think it was a total of 21 contracts. I'm going on my memory. 21 contracts that the Sabine River Authority has for the sale of surface water, and that included things up in northwest Louisiana as well, along the diversion canal that is in southwest Louisiana.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you very much, sir. Very interesting.
Yes, sir.
Well, come back to you, Mr. Heck.
All right. Well, at this time, I would like to segue into item number 6, which also has to do with...
Segue, I like that.
And take it out of order, because it has to do with the Cooperative Endeavor Agreement for Surface Running Water, which the
Any
board...
Any objection to taking it out of order by anybody? I'm sure it's not. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. As you know, the board does have the authority under Act 955 to create and approve the actual Cooperative Endeavor Agreement for Running Surface Water itself. In creating that document, the staff put a very omnibus indemnity clause in that agreement, which we have since found out includes some areas that may, if brought before a court, nullify the entirety of the indemnity agreement.
Did you say omnibus or onerous?
Both, I would think. Depending on which side you're on, it's very onerous for the parties other than the state, but it is an omnibus indemnity, and that includes very inclusive indemnity. However, there are two articles that may impinge upon that indemnity clause, one being Civil Code Article 2004, which provides that any clause is null that in advance excludes limits of liability of one party for intentional or gross fault.
True.
Well, the actual indemnity clause in that Cooperative Endeavor Agreement, if you read it, could be read to indemnify against intentional and gross fault. The second one is the Louisiana Oilfield Anti-Indemnification Act, which finds that an agreement is null and void against public policy if there has been either death or bodily injury to persons where there is negligence or fault. Again, the indemnity agreement and the cooperative endeavor agreement could be read to violate that particular article. So the staff is requesting that the board authorize it to add language to the cooperative endeavor agreement that says at the very end of the three parts of the indemnity clause that they are in effect subject to these particular laws, so that it negates the reading of the clause as being onerous and violation of these articles. So in fact, they would read at the end of the indemnity clause, subject to Civil Code Article 2004 and also subject to the Louisiana Oilfield Anti-Indemnity Act, which is in Louisiana Revised Statutes 9, Section 2780. So that we are asking, again, the purpose of item number 6 is to request authority to add the language to the Cooperative Endeavor Agreement limiting the indemnity clause to follow these particular statutes.
Do you have the specific language that you want the board to adopt there?
What I just said, at the end of each section of the indemnity clause, it will be saying subject to Civil Code Article 2004 and Revised Statute 9, Section 2780.
I move to accept staff's recommendation to insert this language.
I have a motion from Mr. Segura and a second from Mr. Arnold. Is there any discussion by the board first of the motion? Is there any discussion from the public about the motion? Is there any objection to their motion? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you, sir.
Okay, getting back to the agenda, as it is written, item number
Mr.
1.
Mr. Heck, it's 11 o'clock. We need to temporarily recess so we can convene the board meeting.
Any objection to the recess? Any objection? We're at recess. How are you doing this morning? Yeah, I've got it. Thank you. I just wanted to be sure that it was on the record.
Well, since we created any amendment, we'd be happy to confirm.
Yeah. Okay, the July 13th, 2011 regular meeting of the State Mineral Board is called to order. Ms. Talley, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. Angel?
Here.
Mr. Segura?
Here.
Mr. Arnold? Mr. Cordero?
Here.
Mr. Diaz? Mr. Ingram? Mr. Morton, Mr. Sanders, present, Mr. Smith, Ms. Smith, and Mr. Klein. Mr. Chairman, we have 7 members present and a quorum.
Thank you. Item number 2 is approval of the June 8, 2011 minutes. Motion by Mr. Arnold, second by Mr. Segura. Any objections, any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Since we are not complete with the committee recommendations, we'll go ahead and go to item 4, which is I'll entertain a motion to go into executive session for technical briefing. So you got any bids? Okay. So we would then go ahead and entertain a motion is it recess? Recess this and get back. Okay, I'll take a motion to recess. Motion by Mr. Smith, second by Mr. Cordero to recess the regular board meeting. So that we can move forward going back into committee agenda. Any objections to that motion? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Mr. Sanders?
Thank you. Call the committee to back to order. You want to proceed, sir?
Yes.
Okay, item number 1. This is an agency lease by the DeSoto Parish School Board. Under Title 30, when an agency chooses to lease its own property and not avail itself of allowing the mineral board to lease on its behalf, Title 30 requires that the agency utilize the same procedures as the state would use. One of those procedures under the article is that if a delay rental is part of the requirement, that the delay rental cannot be less than half of the bonus that is given for the lease. In the case of the DeSoto Parish School Board, they were leasing a piece of property, and the bid was for approximately $2 million in bonus money, but $1 an acre as the rental. Specifically, the school board should not have accepted that bid because it was in violation of the statute. However, they did. And in accepting the bid, they created a lease itself, which stated that the rental was one half of the approximate $2 million, or a little over $900,000 as the rental, and sent that document back to the successful bidder, which was Suncoast, for signature, approval, and execution. Suncoast did, in fact, sign the document, execute it, and send it back with a separate page that said the reason why they were doing executing this document was so that they did not lose the original $2 million that was put up for bonus. But in any case, the document was executed. Then it's, of course, an agency document is submitted to the board for approval. Well, this being an interesting question, we submitted to the Attorney General, naturally. And following the process, the Attorney General was of the opinion that even though the school board really did not have the authority to accept the bid as it was made, in writing the document, putting the correct amount of rental in it was a counteroffer, which, even though it was a public under the public bid law, was not opposed to the law. They could provide a counteroffer, which Suncoast, in executing the document, accepted the counteroffer. Now, even though the letter was added that it was signed and executed because they did not want to lose the original $2 million, the Attorney General's office was of the opinion that that was not sufficient to negate the execution of the document. Therefore, the document was sent to the board for approval, and based upon the recommendation of the Attorney General's office in consultation, the staff does recommend that, and this is going to be, by the way, on the docket, which is the next committee, for approval, and the staff does recommend that the board approve that particular lease form. Now, there are representatives here from Suncoast, the attorney and a representative from Suncoast who wish to address the board regarding this matter as to whether or not the board should, in fact, approve it. And so at this time, I would ask the board to allow the representatives for Suncoast to come up and make their presentation.
I have just one question.
Yes, sir.
What we're being asked to do today is, in essence, a ratification.
To approve, correct. Under the statute, the board has to approve any lease that is made by an agency.
But we're ratifying the act.
You're ratifying the act of their counteroffer and the execution of the counteroffer. That's correct.
That's what we've been asked to do.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
No, come on up here.
Good morning, honorable board members.
You're not strangers.
This is Mr. Barry Branton. My name is Bill Strain. And I'm an attorney representing Suncoast and Chesapeake.
Welcome, Mr. Brent and Mr. Strain.
Yeah, Suncoast bought this lease from DeSoto Parish. Actually, there were three school boards and that's part of the issue, but there were three school boards that participated in this lease and apparently had, we've never seen them, but apparently they had resolutions where the Red River Parish School Board and the Natchitoches School Board, who also own interest in this acreage, had authorized DeSoto Parish School Board to lease it for them. And the bottom line of this whole situation is that Suncoast slash Chesapeake was caught in the horns of a dilemma because under the Mineral Board's regs, and it may be provided by statute, but I think it's by regulation, if a lease is sent to the party that bid on it and it's not executed and returned within 10 days, you forfeit the check. If the bid's accepted, and you don't sign the lease and return it within 20 days of your receipt of it, you forfeit your money, which in this case would have been $2 million. Now, the appropriate thing for the school board to have done is reject the bid because the bid was not in conformity with the bidding requirements. And what they did, they took it on themselves to change the lease to put in the $2,500 an acre rental payment and then send it back Suncoast, and there's Suncoast and Chesapeake sitting there saying, well, gee, you know, if we sign this thing, we're hung with something we didn't bid and didn't intend. If we do sign it, you know, then we're going to be stuck with this big rental. So they filed a letter. They returned it with a letter of protest. They sent a letter of protest to the Mineral Board, to Mr. Heck, and when they returned the lease to the school board, they enclosed a copy of the letter of protest in the same envelope. And so they were stuck on the horns of a dilemma. What do you do or what don't you do? Do you want to risk losing your $2 million, or do you want to sign the lease, even though it's not what we bid, not what we wanted to bid, and send it back in with a protest and request that the thing be, the lease not be approved and that the property go back up for bid by the school board?
How do you respond to the fact that somebody spending $2 million charged with the knowledge of the laws and the rules and regulations concerning leases and bonus payments and delay rentals, how do you react to the fact that they knew up front that they were doing it wrong?
Well, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. The notice of publication that the school board sent out is not the same form that that Chesapeake's accustomed to seeing from the mineral board. It makes oblique references to a statute and to mineral board regs. But they were, I'm just going to say they were confused by it. They didn't think it was, I mean, they know what to do when the mineral board puts it up for bid. They know exactly what to do. But when they get a strange looking notice of publication and then, I'm not trying to defend that. I'm just saying they could have gone and found out. If they'd called Bill Strain, they would have known.
May I ask you, what is the very nuts and bolts of what you're trying to get us to do as a board here today?
Well,
different from what we're being asked to do over here to ratify the.
Well, there are two things. What I'm asking the board to do is deny approval to the lease, and the statute says that if the board doesn't approve it, it's null and void. In fact, that gets to my second point, and that's if you do decide to approve it, this lease is the lease they sent us is dated April 19th. And it's totally null and void until the board approves it. So we've already wasted a quarter of a year to be able to get our rig. If we got to get a rig on there and drill us, well, we wasted a quarter of our first year of the lease because it's still not approved. If it gets approved today, it's not effective until it's approved by the board. So we have lost everything since April 19th in terms of time, which could make the difference in getting a well drill before we have to pay that rent or not. Mm-hmm. So if the board does decide to approve it, it's our request that the lease be made effective on the date of the board's approval.
With this, just so the record will be correct, this board member's memory, this is the first time that this has been brought up here for us to discuss. I don't want it to sound like we've been sitting on our duff.
Oh, no. What happened was the school board had to send it to their finance committee, and then they had to coordinate with the other two school boards and so forth, and it was a long time before we got that lease back, a long time after the bid was submitted. It took them forever to get it back to us, and then when we did, it came back in the form that it came back in. So, no, you have not. No, the board, in fact, it was just, I think, last week last week or the week before that Mr. Heck even received the paperwork from the school board.
Thanks.
I was kind enough to share it with me.
I wasn't being rude to you, Mr. Strain, but I just want to be sure.
Nobody's saying that this board was recalcitrant. No way. No way, no how. Y'all have been very prompt with it, and Mr. Heck was very prompt in getting it to the Attorney General's office, and they were very prompt in getting him an answer back. I don't agree with the answer, but me, that is it may.
Mr. Angell is requesting permission.
Thank you, sir.
The issue was the rental payment?
Correct.
So when the bid was sent in on a price per acre, I had stepped out for a second. Can you tell me what happened when the rental price was not?
The rental price they bid, the total amount of acreage that was bid was $614.43 acres. What was bid as a rental was $614.43, which is a dollar per acre. The statute says that when a rental is bid, if a delay rental is requested, that it cannot be less than one half of the bonus. That's statutory. So, in fact, the rental that was offered on the bid form was not up to the statutory requirement.
And what was the price per acre on the bonus?
Well, the total bonus was $1,900,000-something, so the rental would have been over $900,000.
Yeah, what was the price per acre on the bonus?
$3,500.
$3,500. So when it came back to you, it came back with $1,750 per acre rental?
Well, the rental is always stated as a total amount. So it came back $900,000-something as the rental per acre.
Well, that may be true, but unless I'm wrong, they would have a right to pay a rental on only a certain part of acreage. So,
excuse me, a rental is a rental. You can't change the rental based on acreage. It's a given amount.
Okay, but it's calculated on a price per acre basis.
Actually, no. The rental is calculated on the bonus amount. The price per acre that's on the rental form, they use, what is used is when you do use for deferred development, the deferred development says that when you pay a deferred development, it's one half of.
Hey, help me, I'm reaching back into some of my experience. On the first year anniversary,
right,
would it be permissible for the company to reduce acreage and select a portion of the leased premises?
Yes.
Okay, so.
But that doesn't reduce the rental.
I got you. All right. That doesn't reduce the rental on our lease form, or that's basically standard law?
It's basically standard, but it's definitely on our lease form.
All right. And so there is a concern that I understand that April, and now you're 3 months into, you know, you bought four tires and you only got three left.
Right.
Right. I understand that. No, and so are you does the prospect of having to pay the bonus, I mean a rental payment, you obviously don't have a problem with the bonus payment.
No.
But the prospect of having to pay the rental, I'm sorry, of $900,000 is where the pro forma may not work for you, correct?
That's correct.
That's correct. And I would add this, if I might, sir. There may be a possibility of drilling, and the way the state agency lease form is written, it's very similar to the state lease form. If you drill, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Hatwood, if you drill during the first year, you don't owe the rental. The second, you don't owe the first anniversary rental.
Correct. If you're drilling across the rental date.
Right.
Huh? If you're drilling across the rental date.
I think under the agency lease, you don't have to drill across the rental date.
Well, let me may be some further questioning, but I'm trying to find out what the resolve of the lessee would be on this issue. You talked about, I think what you have, your answer to Mr. Sanders' question was a black and white answer. Is I'm assuming the school board is interested in the $2 million bonus money.
I think they're quite interested in it.
Okay. And you're interested in paying the $2 million?
We don't have a problem paying the $2 million.
So we halfway there. What we have a problem with is making a commitment of $900,000 when we're one quarter way into the anniversary term, okay? Yep. But yet the school board has the issue that if we reject this today, that there may not be another bid. And
might not.
And I'm reminded of what happened when we had a mineral board lease sale that was canceled in September of 2008 because of a hurricane in Baton Rouge,
mm-hmm.
that the national economy imploded in October of 2008, and the prices that we got in August were a lot more than we got in November. So things happen. Things do happen. So the school board has something, a bird in the hand, that they certainly don't want to see evaporate. You have a bird in the hand that you don't want to see evaporate, and yet we're being asked to make a decision that is going to force one of those things to evaporate. And I would ask is whether or not the law would provide for a suspension of the rental payment with a drilling commitment.
I don't think the law would allow the board to amend any agency lease, which mm-hmm. that would be as an amendment of the agency.
I'm not talking about, I'm talking about providing extreme leadership with the mineral board and attorney general's office, getting the school board here with the lessee here and saying, guys, we all got something that we want here. We have to deal within the boxes of the law, but can we get to a point where everyone can get to something? I'm not particularly excited about voting to not approve a lease form that generates $2 million for public education in the state, but I'm also not excited about voting to accept it when a company feels like, you know, they were in a situation where somebody manuscripted some information on a lease and gave it to them, and they were forced with either you sign it or you're going to pay $2 million anyway. And our job is to try to figure that out so we can have a win.
Well, if the board, let me put it this way, if the board doesn't approve the lease today, okay, as Mr. Strain said, it's a null and void lease.
Why?
Because the statute says if the board doesn't approve it.
It's not, no, I disagree. I think it's not if the board doesn't approve it today, it's a null and void lease.
No, no, if
it's
the board doesn't approve it
today.
Right.
Right?
If the board doesn't approve it today, it's until the board does approve it, it's a null and void. Excuse me. My semantics correct.
You brought up a very good point, Mr. Angel. The next thing on my list to discuss was that if you're inclined.
Excuse me just one second. Yeah. I'd like to hear the balance.
Yeah, let me finish.
Remarks.
No. What I was going to say is it would certainly be incentive for the school board to, if the board wishes, to come meet with staff and Suncoast, which is the lessee,
mm-hmm.
and work out those differences, because if the board doesn't approve it ultimately, they will have to return the $2 million, which you're right, they probably don't want to do.
Well, I think, look, we're in a point where we can leverage both sides to do the right thing. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I for one, don't believe it's appropriate for us to disapprove it today, and I don't think it's appropriate for us to approve it today until we get all parties in the room and try to get to a point where folks understand that everybody has something to risk here, and maybe we can figure it out. And I think that would be what leadership would require us to do. I don't know. I'm particularly interested. I have to believe that the school board would say, I have to believe the school board today would say, rather than turning it down, let us live for another day. And I have to believe that Suncoast would say, rather than approving it today, let us live for another day. And if that can be put on the record, then
yeah, if that is the wish of the entire board, then what you would do, I would recommend that you do, is table the matter at least until the next mineral board meeting. So that would allow the parties to get together and try to, because tabling the matter is not an approval or a disapproval. It does not approve the lease, and therefore it is not a valid lease. You haven't disapproved the lease, so there is still that issue to be solved, but it gives both parties time to sit down and negotiate.
And if you say, hey, look, you know, we can't take this stomachache anymore, we need a no, then
not
I certainly get
sir. Not at all, because the last thing on my list to talk about while I was sitting here at this table is that I was going to ask it to be deferred to the next lease sale so we can get together and get our legal authorities lined up in a memorandum. And your suggestion is very good. Get the school board, the mineral board, and the attorney general's office and Suncoast all together in a meeting with, I guess, at the staff quarters, and then be prepared to come back to the board next month. And, you know, and we'll either hammer out a deal or we won't.
Right.
But I think we will.
Everybody has something to gain here. Look, Chesapeake has been a great investor in this state, drilled a lot of wells, created a lot of wealth, paid for a lot. In fact, if you take a look at the school board taxes in those areas, a lot of them have been driven by Chesapeake and some of those companies. So but I appreciate what you guys are doing, sir, and your investment in the state. We find ourselves as arbitrators. I think if you're willing to wait, I think we can do you a much better, potentially a much better job for all of us.
I agree also.
Oh, I think so. We're very happy with that for now.
Mr. Angel, I guess some conference between the AG's office and...
Sidebar, yeah.
You, where'd you go to law school?
CNN. I've been watching CNN.
Okay. Based upon the expressions that have been made today, the staff then would recommend that this matter be tabled until the next... at least until the next board meeting, pending getting together of all the different parties to try to work out this solution to this before the board takes definitive action.
The board has heard the recommendation of Mr. Heck. What's the pleasure of the board?
With accept staff recommendation.
I have a motion for Mr. Arnold to accept staff recommendation.
Second.
Mrs. Agura has given us a second. Is there some discussion by the board?
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Angel.
I think Mr. Jackson had a point.
Mr.
If there's any public
comment. Well, I'm going to get public comment. Just one second.
I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Segura.
Are you, if everything was all in line, you all are ready to march forward to drill?
I don't have the authority to make a drilling commitment, but my anticipation would be that
I mean, because your concern was you lost a quarter of a year.
Well, that's a big part of it, but I don't control Chesapeake's drilling schedule. I don't control rig availability and stuff. If that, they may be, once we have our meeting and get together, they may be willing to make a drilling commitment, and if not making such a commitment within the first year or whatever the effective date of the lease is, that's not acceptable to the school board. It'll be right back up here in front of you guys.
Well, certainly one of the recommendations would be to, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, would be to make the date of the lease itself 4 months further on to give them the full year if they're going to have to pay the rental.
That's
Mr. Stream, may I suggest that when we do meet, that you do bring someone who does have the ability to discuss their readiness to drill?
Oh, no, we'll bring somebody with authority to make any commitment we need. I would suggest we meet up in the Mineral Board's conference room. That's big enough to accommodate us all. If it's not, we'll find a place somewhere in this building that is. And I'll have somebody there from Chesapeake to make that commitment. Suncoast can't make that commitment for them, and I don't have the authority to do it either.
Mr. Heck will be in touch with you to schedule the meeting.
Back to the agenda. Is there any comment from the public concerning the issue that we're discussing here today? We have a motion on the floor to accept staff's recommendation to defer this matter to the next board meeting in August. And we have a second. Is there any objection, any further discussion on that motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted unanimously, Mr. Heck.
Thank you. Okay, item number two is a request for...
Excuse me, Mr. Heck. Thank you very much, Mr. Strain.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the board's consideration of this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Angel, for your input. Mr. Heck?
Item number two is a request for final approval of a lease amendment by Sandridge Exploration and Production, LLC, on State Lease 2102 to add the force majeure clause plus the additional clauses that are required by the board, the four clauses. This item, the document has been signed, executed by Sandridge, is duly advertised, and is on the docket at this time as item number 11-20. And the staff recommends final approval.
With pleasure, the board. Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Thank you, Mr. Segura. Any discussion by the board? Discussion by the public concerning this motion? What's the pleasure of the board? Any objection? Hearing none, the matter is adopted unanimously.
Item number three is a request by the staff for authority to publish the notice of intent in the register for rules governing alternate energy leases in Louisiana. The staff has worked diligently over many months in meeting with the various stakeholders to have these rules ready to go. They are ready to be promulgated as far as the staff is concerned. Therefore, they are requesting that the board authorize a notice to be published in the register, which will then, of course, follow the process of all rules. Public meetings and that, if necessary.
Mr. Heck, has the board had an opportunity to look at this?
I think the rules were given to the board. Of course, not. I don't know when it was. I know you were given it.
Yes, sir. At the agenda meeting.
Oh, so y'all haven't had a chance to read all of them yet? I mean, nobody's had a chance?
It's in the binder, and Mary Beth had offered to send a copy to anyone who wanted to look at it ahead of time.
Okay. If the board does not feel it's had enough time to look over those rules and does not feel comfortable authorizing the notice to be published, we can again table this matter until the next mineral board meeting.
Just a moment. Let me get feel for the pleasure of the board. What's the board's wishes in terms of delaying or acting based on what we've just heard? Y'all want to proceed to authorize the publication or defer that matter? Taylor, anybody objecting to proceeding with the matter? Hearing no objection from the board, we'll proceed to deal with the matter.
Right.
To authorize the publication
Right. Because, again, this is a process that also has got to go through the standing committees of the House and the Senate. It's also got a public meeting, and any public information regarding those rules can be given to us before they are finally promulgated.
I'm moving fairly rapidly. We haven't had a vote, I don't believe, on
right. I'm just yet. Giving you an explanation.
Thank you very much. Is there any objection to the motion of Mr. Arnold, as seconded by Mr. Segura, that's on the floor? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Yes, sir.
Item number four. This is a request by Clayton Williams Energy, Inc. to amend State Lease 19706, Main Pass, to add a shut-in oil well clause for a payment of the in-lieu royalty of $50 per acre. As the board may know, there is a provision in the state lease form for a shut-in gas well. It applies only at the moment to gas wells. In this particular instance, Clayton Williams drilled an oil well, but for various reasons was unable to produce and probably will be unable to produce this well prior to the September, I think it's September the... Well, September 11th, I think it is the anniversary date which this lease will terminate the primary term. In the lease form that the staff was working on, the new lease form, there was an oil well shut-in provision in addition to the gas well, because in many instances, when the force majeure is activated, in activating the force majeure, the lessee was required to, if there were any other provisions of the lease form which allowed the lessee to maintain the lease other than just straight force majeure, they were required to do that. Well, in the case of a gas well, there was the gas shut-in payment, so those parties were forced to pay a shut-in payment, whereas if it was an oil well, there were no other provisions, the main force majeure held the lease. So in the new lease form, there were an oil and a gas well shut-in provision that would have maintained the lease in all cases, including force majeure. In this particular case, because it is a lease amendment, because the state, in doing this, and it's not a usual situation, the state was increasing the in-lieu royalty payment, which under the present lease form is $25 an acre, to $50 an acre. This is really something that the staff recommends, because in meeting with Clayton Williams, they are diligently pursuing getting this particular well on production, getting it the state royalty money. And as of at the present time, this is basically the only way that they can maintain this lease and not have to go out and bid it again if it terminates.
Mr. Tech, the equities are in favor of Clayton Williams to do this, are they not?
That's correct. It definitely is.
Because of various reasons, they haven't been able to get the facilities in place to produce. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
There is a representative of Clayton Williams here if the board would like to ask any questions.
Certainly. Certainly we'd like to hear from you, sir. Come on
Stephen
up.
Stephen Baker, attorney from Lafayette for Clayton Williams.
Would you state for the record in the mic, please, sir, so she can pick it up?
Yes, sir. Stephen Baker. I'm an attorney from Lafayette.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
For Clayton Williams. Mr. Heck is correct. We met with the staff last month, and this State Lease 19706, number one well, drilled as a lease well, although it's pending unitization. Actually, our drilling efforts have gone beyond the primary term. So we're faced now with the 90-day continuous operational clause with what appears to be an oil well. And so short of bringing out a test barge, and there are always good faith questions there within every 90 days to produce to the barge, that's really the only way, given the current circumstances and the terms of the lease, that specifically state that the building facilities do not maintain or interrupt the 90-day continuous operational provision in the state lease currently. So Clayton Williams is, they have already commenced their surveying, their permitting. They're working with Sonat for, the production facilities in that location of Coquille Bay Field, which is right by Main Pass area. So I know it's somewhat novel. I don't know that the board has ever done this before. Given the groundbreaking efforts of the staff previously to include this same language, if you will, or actually a somewhat different derivation of it, but pretty much the same for Norwell, we would very much like to see this lease amended for this provision and pay the $50 per acre as a semi-annual payment while we continue with the permitting and the pipeline facilities and the production facilities so that we can get the well on.
Is there any legal prohibition
to
do this year? Although it's not ordinarily handled this way.
Right. There's no legal prohibition because the state is authorized by statute to do what is to even amend the lease in whatever is best interest of the state.
Thank you. Just stand, Bill, just a moment, please, Mr. Baker. Thank you.
Thank
for your
you.
Comments. What's the pleasure of the? I'm sorry. Did you have?
Mentioned that Clayton Williams did offer consideration in exchange for this lease amendment, which was doubling the price per acre.
Right. Do I hear a motion for the board or some questions?
I'd like to make a motion to approve at the appropriate time.
Thank you, Mr. Kader.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold, for the second. Board having discussion on the issue.
I have one question. Is there a time frame? Oh, this is it. You said semi-annual payments of $100 a year per acre. Is there a limit?
Well, it would include, and of course, we're going to have to work out the language. It'll be subject to form and legality, which I have submitted some language. Rick is looking at it.
I think we'll have it ready for advertising, put on the docket for the next mineral board meeting. And the normal language for the gas shut-in royalty allows a semi-annual payment for a total of 6 semi-annual or 3 years. We may not need that for this because, again, they're working on the facilities. They may not even need the full first 6 months. This is just something to get them through that 90-day cessation of work period. So the language will reflect that.
My concern is setting up precedent.
Excuse me?
My concern is setting a precedent of holding property for $50 an acre.
We could do that. Certainly we're getting something in addition as a payment for doing this lease amendment. This is more than the regular gas. And again, in our new lease form that was being worked on, both the gas and the oil were being increased.
I haven't called for public comment. Any public comment on this issue we're discussing? Hearing none. Anything else from the board? Any other comments? Questions? We have a motion and a second. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Happy to be here.
Appreciate your input.
Okay, we're down to item number 7. And this is a request by the staff for authority to add the language of the present lease form rider that is used into the lease form itself. One of the things that has happened in the 1981 lease form revision, there was the lease form, and then every time something was added, a rider was attached to it. This rider has survived, I have no idea why, but until the present time. The new lease form, of course, was not going to have a rider. So since that we're not working on that right now, the staff is requesting that the language that is used in the rider be added to the actual lease form itself so that there is no longer a rider. So it's not changing anything. It's just adding the language.
I'll move to accept.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold, for the motion. Your second. Thank you, Mr. Smith, for the second. Is there any discussion by the board? Discussion by the public? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries unanimously, sir.
Okay. Item number 8 is a request by Energy 21 to extend the previous extensions of the primary term state lease 18737 18738 for an additional 6 months in return for a full rental payment. What happened here is that the board previously granted a 1-year extension on this matter to Gray, I think it was Gray, let's see, which was a subsidiary of Exxon. Or actually transferred to Exxon, so the his Great Production Company obtained the extensions of those leases and then later assigned the leases to Exxon Mobil because Exxon Mobil was going to do the work within that 1-year extension. Instead of doing the work, what Mobile did was transfer to Energy 21, but that was very recent transfer. And so Energy 21 definitely has started the process of the drilling process on these two state leases. I would include these two state leases in a unit. The permitting has started and all of that. However, the end of the extended primary term may prevent them from actually completing what they've already started. So what they're asking for is a further extension of only 6 months to the previously extended primary term to allow them to go ahead and drill the well within the unit. And the unit is going to be proposed is the same one that Exxon had proposed when the original extension was granted. We're recommending that it be for, of course, a full rental. But since it was the royalty was already raised by 0.5% when the previous extension was done, the staff is not recommending that another 0.5% be added because the royalty that when the additional 0.5% was added to the original royalty of that lease when the first extension was given, it brought the royalty up to the royalty average in that area. And so rather than add another 0.5% royalty, make Energy 21 do this, which may not allow the economics of what they're doing to work, the staff would recommend that it be for a full rental payment, which is what a six-month extension would normally get anyway. So the staff is recommending that a further six-month extension of the primary term be made for in consideration of the payment of a full rental.
And there's a representative of Energy 21 here for any questions?
Yes, there is.
You had a question?
I have a question for staff. This wouldn't qualify for a shut-in, right? This would qualify for a shut-in payment?
There's no well drill yet.
Okay. Well, you said
so it can't qualify.
So permit and everything else. Okay.
Right.
Which my concerns on the first ones. I have no problem. I'll make
any
a motion to accept.
Any further questions? We have a motion on the floor. Thank you. Any objection to the motion? I don't know. I'm not sure that I have a motion and a second here. On this one, Mr. Smith, you made the motion, and Mr. Arnold, you have the second. I'm sorry, I was trying to follow your thoughts also. Is there any objection to the... Let me call for public comment, just in case there is any. None. Is there any objection on part of the board to the motion? Motion's adopted unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
We're not being rude to you. You didn't need to be heard, did you? Thank you.
He'll accept it. Okay, the rest of the items, of course, will be in executive session. But before we go in executive session, I don't know, I'm going to have to ask the Attorney General's office. There was a new item that was added prior to the board meeting, a discussion of a case that was filed, Callon Petroleum Operating Company that was filed. We have an additional suit that was filed, Webb versus Department of Natural Resources, and I don't know.
Do y'all want to discuss that as well?
Okay. In that case, the staff would request that the board add as item number 11 in executive session a discussion of the litigation titled Webb versus Department of Natural Resources, which has just been received. And, of course, you need unanimous. Excuse me? I can't. I don't know what it is. I don't have it. They have it.
Webb or Anthony Webb, and there's several.
Does anyone have the title and the docket number of the case that they can read into the record?
Y'all have it.
Give me a second. They're looking for that. While we're standing by for searching for that, the chair would like the record to reflect that Mr. Scott Patton was here to speak on behalf of item number 6 that we just adopted, and I did not place his name of record, and I want his name of record as being here. Thank you, Mr. Patton. item number 8. I'm sorry, I said 6. Thank you very much, sir.
This is Ryan Seidman with the Attorney General.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. The docket on this case is Kenneth Webb et al. Versus State of Louisiana et al. Docket number 72615, 42nd Judicial District, DeSoto Parish, Louisiana.
I make a motion to add that as item number 11 to the legal title, controversy meeting, and for that to be heard in executive session.
Okay, we've heard the motion. Do you have a second? Thank you, Mr. Segura, for the second. Any objection to adding this item as item number
11?
11. Any comment from the public on the subject? Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
I'd like to move to the executive session to discuss items 9, 10, 11.
Okay. Any objection? Hearing none, executive session. They're getting the money's worth here today, aren't you, son? $75. We're going to have to double the fee here today. They're liable to get in your pocket, too, Bubba. But you see, your license is not an issue then. And they'll jerk your license in Louisiana. A fellow out here on Sherwood Boulevard by the name of Chuck Plasmar will put it on your ass and make it stick and make you go on a new job. How's the food business? Damn, your commodities are going through the roof. Ooh, Lord. That's unreal, isn't it? You use a lot of that when you make it.
One phase of week, if you give an operating agreement apart, you would be more phase of your operating.
Yeah. Well, remember, at the very beginning, that's what I said. You're up to the reason. But...
He's getting him an education, isn't he? He's getting him an education, isn't he? Is he 60? Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord, son, he's over there. He could get in trouble. He's not 17 yet. So he can hijack
something. I can look it back up.
Did you understand all that stuff?
Some. Very little.
You understood more of it. You were making like you did. You ever thought this?
It's a lot different when the secretary's here. Yeah.
Well, he stirs it up.
Yeah. Where what is the reason? What is the reason that...
I just work here. $75 a day. What is her name?
This has been way too long.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's okay.
Oh, I'll ask her.
I went this far. I'm not going to carry it further.
Hey, Arm, you've been here for about a generation. Good. Who says that we have to start the level? That's that to go. So it's just board root. Or we just practice.
I mean, she stopped the presentation and said it's 11 o'clock. We asked her, what's the reason?
What?
Staff?
Really? Yeah. Started.
Had to get it. You ready to resume, Mr. Heck?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. It's been an interesting session.
You want to come out of executive session?
Yes, sir.
Make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Thank you, Mr. Segura, for your second. Any objection to coming out of executive session? Hearing none, we are.
Okay. On items 9, 10, and 11 that were discussed in executive session, no action is required by the board on either of those issues at this time. And having said that, there are no other items to discuss as far as on the agenda.
Thank you very much for the motion to adjourn. How about you, Mr. Arnold, your second? Thank you. Any objection to adjourning? We're adjourned. This committee is adjourned.
I'll go ahead and call the docket review committee to order. What staff members handling this one? Mr. Dennis? We need to do that for the committee? Okay. Call roll for, I'm sorry, let me. Remember, can you handle the roll? Roll on docket review committee? Or, yeah. Okay, I have it. I'm sorry, ma'am. Okay, Scott Angel here, Paul Segura, Tom Arnold, Emil Cadero,
here.
Juba Diaz, Bay Ingram, Michael Martin, Tom Sanders, Daryl Smith, Helen Smith, and Gary Graves, represented by Chip Klein. Here. We have a quorum. Mr. Dennis?
Okay. Okay, the staff of the Petroleum Lands Division of the Office of Mineral Resources has reviewed those items requiring board approval for the July 13, 2011 Docket Review Committee and recommends the following. For Category A, state agency leases, please approve item number 1, which is a lease from the Cameron Parish School Board to United World Energy Corporation containing 324.3 acres for a bonus of $97,290 and a royalty of 27.5%. Please approve item number 2, which is the lease from the Vermilion Parish School Board to Patrick L. Donahue Petroleum Properties containing 746.52 acres and a bonus of $187,376.52 and a royalty of 25%. For item number 3, which is the lease from the DeSoto Parish School Board for the DeSoto Parish School Board, Nacogdoches Parish School Board, and the Red River School Board, awarded to Suncoast Land Services Incorporated, containing 614.43 acres for a bonus of $1,996,897.50 and a royalty of 25%. Recommendations to defer until the next State Mineral and Energy Board meeting as per State Mineral Board and Energy Board decision for item number 1 of the Legal and Title Controversy Committee agenda. Excuse me. For Category B, state lease transfers, please approve items number 1 through items number 27 as follows. Item 1 is an assignment from Theopolis Oil and Gas and Land Services, LLC, to Phoenix Exploration, Louisiana, C, LLC, and Castec Energy, 2005 LP, affecting state lease numbers 20523, 20524, 20525, 20531, and 20534. Item number 2, which is an assignment from Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC, and to Phoenix Exploration, Louisiana, C, LLC, et al., affecting state lease numbers 20528, 20529, and 20530. Item number 3, which is an assignment from Theopolis Oil, Gas, and Land Services, LLC, to Phoenix Exploration, Louisiana, C, LLC, et al., affecting state lease numbers 20526 and 50527. Item number 4, which is an assignment from FVC, LLC, and to Riverstone Management, LLC, affecting state lease numbers 19152, 19154, 19155, 19259, 19262, 19268, 19269, 19270, 19296, 19299, 19393, 19395, 19397, 19411, 19422, 19745, 19804, and 19810.
Excuse me, Mr. Dennis, in the interest of time, some of the board members have requested you revert to the old one.
You want me to revert to the short form?
Thank you.
Hoping you would say that.
I'll second that.
Okay.
No objection.
It was going to take a long time. Okay. Let's just do this again. For Category B state lease transfers, please approve items number 1 through items 27.
Anything in items 1 through 27 other than routine?
Yes.
Yeah, you would categorize that recommendation under Category B for the approval of items 1 through 27 as routine and ordinary?
Exactly. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
And for items number 28 through items 33, to approve, subject to the approval of the Governor of Louisiana. For Category C, Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, State Agency Lease Transfers, there were no items submitted for this category. And for Category D, Advertised Proposals, please approve items number 1 and item number 2, and that would complete the staff's recommendations to the Document Review Committee.
Okay. This question would be maybe for Mr. Jackson or Mr. Cederman. I realize that there must have been some change in the law some time ago, and y'all probably explained this to me, that requires the governor to approve certain things, and that's either for leases that were old leases or whatever. Is that right? Would it take a change in it would take constitutional amendment or statutory changes to get rid of that archaic process? I got you. Okay. Could you just check that out to see if we are doing something that is slowing the process down and somewhat repetitive that we could otherwise avoid? Okay. I would then go ahead and entertain a motion. Motion by Segura, second by Arnold, to accept staff's recommendation of the Docket Review Committee. Any objections? Any discussions? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Okay. Ms. Talley, does that take care of all of the committee recommendations?
Yes, sir, it does.
Okay. What I would like to do at this point in time is go ahead and call the let me go ahead and adjourn. I need a motion to adjourn the Docket Review Committee.
Move.
Motion by Segura, second by Sanders. Hearing no discussion, no objections. That motion is approved, and I'll go ahead and call the regular board meeting of July 13th back into order, and would go to item 4, right, which would be a technical briefing and a motion to go into executive session on that. Motion by Arnold, second by Segura. Any objections? Hearing none. I'm sorry. Second by Sanders, not Segura. Hearing no objections, that motion is approved.
thought it was going to slow down after session, but. That's just a whole other ball game.
We're going to have a little more than $4 million today. That's a good day, son. We're going to have more than $4 million today. We're going to have a little money to play with over there.
Motion by Segura, second by Sanders to return from return by executive session. And we'll go ahead and go to item five is the awarding of leases. Mr. Vaughn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On track number 42131, the staff recommends that the first bid by Success Energy on 598.8 acres for a bonus of $128,742 be accepted. On track number 42138, the staff recommends that the bid of CS Tax Properties LLC be accepted. On track number 42184, the staff recommends the bid of Matador Resources be accepted. And on track number 42186, the staff recommends the bid of Eagle Stone Energy Partners. As to the remaining tracks receiving bids, we're recommending that all of those bids be accepted.
That concludes your report?
Yes.
Okay, good. Motion to accept staff recommendation. Motion by Smith, second by Cadera. Any discussion, any objection? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Okay, on item six, legislative update, the staff has put something together, and I would suggest that you all take a look at it, and Ms. Talley has informed me that perhaps at next meeting we can maybe get into it a little bit more. I would want to go ahead and return to item three and entertain a motion to adopt the committee recommendations for the Lease Review Committee, Nomination and Track Committee, Audit Committee, Legal and Title Controversy Committee, and Docket Review Committee.
Move.
Motion by Sanders, second by Segura. Any discussion, any objections? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. I would like to go ahead and make a motion to add to the agenda discussion about a potential request for information on auditing procedures and technology that's out there. And the staff has some information about that, so it would be in order for us to have a motion to extend the agenda. That would be an additional item. A motion by Segura, seconded by Cordero. And also, I would like to add a motion to add to the agenda the discussion of the incentives and the potential resolution that was, I think, forwarded to you all at the perhaps May meeting. So, again, that would be a separate item to discuss that. Motion by Segura, second by Arnold. Any objections to that? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. So, Ms. Talley, before I get into those two things, everything else on the agenda that needs to be taken care of is, in fact, taken care of. Is that right? Okay. You should have, we'll go to what I'm assuming we'll call, be renamed item number eight. And this is this potential RFI and audit information. And Ms. Talley, would you maybe take us through what this operational audit issue was, what we are doing, and potentially some resolve we would talk about?
I have a brief PowerPoint presentation on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. This performance audit report was issued last year. We have previously gone over it with the board. I'll briefly go over it again, and we'll talk about some updates. The first finding in the report said that the office had audited approximately 21% of royalties over the past 10 years and had recovered approximately $75 million in royalties over the past five fiscal years. However, they cited that the office had not audited about 168 payers, which represented 32% of the payers, who had paid about $43 million in royalties over the last 10 fiscal years. Thank you. The staff's comments on the findings are, first of all royalty reports are subject to desk audits on a monthly basis. So it's a little bit misleading to say that we had 168 payers that were unaudited. They were not subjected to field audits. Secondly, Sunrise has automated auditing features built into it, such as price tolerance checks and decimal checks, and the staff does run these reports and act upon any discrepancies found each month. Finally, payers are selected for field audits based on a number of factors included in a risk model, which may be the amount of royalty paid, the amount of time since they're last audited, any previous audit findings, findings with other payers in the same units, any problems found during the lease review process, anything that comes up that might indicate a problem. And as you can see from this slide, the 68% of payers that were subjected to field audits accounted for 99.11% of those royalties received over the 10-year period.
Before you go on, I want you to express that in a different way, if you could.
Sure.
I'm not so sure I understand that.
Me either.
So of 100% of our payers?
Yes, sir.
68% were subject to a field audit?
That's correct.
And that's the difference between that 32% that you mentioned on the previous slide?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And of this, of the royalties, it accounted for 99.11% of the royalty received. So in auditing 68% of, in a, conducting field audits on 68% of the payors, we audited 99.11% of the entire royalty portfolio?
Yes. Of the, those 68 payers accounted for 99.11% of the dollars.
Okay. When you say of royalty received, you're not talking about of audited? Of
no, sir. Audited total royalty received.
Okay. So if I could, because I want to make sure I get this, you're doing a good job. I may not be really understanding. If we talk about the state of Louisiana receiving $1 billion in royalties,
yes, sir.
You made a decision based on risk that you said from the previous slide, and you audited 68% of the total payors.
Yes, sir.
And in doing so, if there was $1 billion that was received in royalty,
you got
900 of that, you touched those payors by touching 68% of them. You touched those payors that had paid $991 million to the state of Louisiana.
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay, next slide.
It's funny, that's not in the audit, huh?
No, that was conveniently left out. This is just an average amount paid by the people who were field audited versus those who weren't. As you can see, the payers selected for field audits paid an average of $1.2 million a year, whereas the payers who were not selected for field audits paid an average of $8,600 a year. And as you know, a field audit costs money. We incur staff time and travel costs. And assuming that an audit yields an average of a 25% underpayment, if we sent someone out to audit $8,600 and they recover $2,000, it's not worth the time and travel expense to do that. We'll lose money on that deal. Yes, sir, Mr. Sanders.
Question, please. Does the profile that you gave in response just a moment ago to set up the auditing, the parties that are subject to being field audited?
Yes, sir.
Does that validate, is that profile validated by the 991 million point one? That validates your profile?
I believe it does.
Is that a floating? Is that a constantly being adjusted profile based on findings?
It sure is. Ms. Newman, as you know, is the audit director, and each year she sits down with her staff and develops a new audit schedule based on things that have occurred during the year, information that's come to their attention, and they decide who to audit each year. It's not a set schedule for the next 10 years. It
sounds like an IRS-type approach with these profiles that they develop for lawyers and politicians. And
Right. So,
yes, sir.
So let's not be. I'm glad I'm not either one of those. Would it be fair to say that someone based on risk assessment who was a payer in that 32% mix 2 years ago?
Yes, sir.
But for whatever reason, because of a surge in activity, would come into, and that 68-32 is not a number that is constant, right? That number changes depending upon your risk assessment, right?
It sure does. And the number of payers changes daily. We'll have payers that will leave the state or payers that will come into it. They buy properties, sell properties. Somebody was maybe paying $8,600 a year for a while, and then suddenly they got a big property and they're paying us $2 million a year. It changes. And as far as companies who don't pay us anymore, we do a closeout on them. If they've been paying us for a while and then they've left the state, we're going to go in and do a closeout audit to make sure, even if it's a small dollar amount, that while they were paying, we were paid fairly.
Got you. So given, if you were given, although you made the statement that it costs money to do field audits and you have to use the resources that you have to go where the biggest recovery opportunity is and the most risk to the state, I guess I should say. That's what you're really looking for, is addressing risk.
Right.
Given additional resources, additional technology, additional whatever's out there, we could, in fact, cover 100% every year if money were not an issue.
Yes, sir. You can go to the next one. Okay, of the payers that were not field audited, 82 of those paid less than $1,000 a year in royalties. And as I mentioned, field audits involve payroll and travel costs, which is expensive. And so there's not much value in the state in auditing somebody who pays $1,000 a year. But as the Secretary mentioned, if they do start paying more, then they would be audited. Okay. Lessees pay us on a LU code basis, which stands for lease unit well, and this is the primary reason for all payers not being subject to field audit. During fiscal year 2010, there were 212 LU codes that had more than one payer, with one LU code having as many as six different payers. One of the options for the board is requiring one payer per LU code. It makes it easier for the staff to track and to determine how much royalty was actually paid on that LU code. It makes it very confusing and difficult to allocate the money when you have a number of different payers on a LU code. It may require a lot of change, or it could be board action, but they would have to be mandated one payer per LU code. Okay, the second finding in the audit was that the office had not conducted a desk volume audit since 2000, and that's correct. We agreed with that finding. However, we have subsequently implemented the volume audit function. Ms. Newman has staff who's working on implementing that this fiscal year. They're in the planning stage right now and expect to get it off the ground before the year is over.
Do you know why that was in 2000 a decision was made? I know that none of us on this particular subject matter were involved in that.
I don't know why it was discontinued. The staff who were here back then, they commented that we usually found money when we did volume audits. I don't know why the decision was made to discontinue it.
Okay. From what I was told previously, it was due to reductions in staff.
I got you.
I can't validate that, but that's what I was told when I took over.
We can move forward, Glenda. Okay, the third and last finding in the report was that the office had not coordinated audit activities with the Office of Conservation and the Department of Revenue in order to share information that could affect the accuracy of royalty payments. And this has been resolved as well. We have a cooperative endeavor agreement with Office of Conservation as well as Department of Revenue to share information to ensure that we get all the information we need that could impact royalty payments. And we'll move on to the last slide, which is an update. Here we go. In this fiscal year, the budget that just got passed, we requested and received approval for auditing software, and the staff has already purchased that software. It's going to automate a lot of things for us and enhance our audit coverage. It's a very powerful tool. We had it when I was at the Legislative Auditor's Office, and I'm happy that we have it now here. A number of state agencies have had it for a while, but this is the first time we'll have it. And secondly, the audit director has implemented new procedures on the audits and time budgeting and scheduling to ensure that we are going to audit some of the small payers this year.
What was the cost of that acquisition? Of
$82,000.
To that. Okay, what I would like to do is charge the staff with putting together a request for information. I'm calling it an RFI. I'd like for you to go into the, you know, and we can perhaps visit, but I'd like the mineral board to you know, perhaps consider a motion in supporting this. It is clear to me that although we audited 99% of the revenue received, we have a shortage of staff necessary to audit 100% of the payors. You know, I certainly believe that if all of us were working for ourselves in our own company, that would be the appropriate way to spend money and time and resources on the bigger fish than the smaller fish. But notwithstanding that, the Legislative Auditor's Office has indicated that they think it's a good idea for us to potentially look at even some of those smaller fish. I understand that, and I think we ought to try to rise to the occasion. So what I'm interested in doing is seeing if there's any additional software, any additional services that are out there that folks would respond to initially, a RFI, okay, whether it would be firms that would come in and look at the data. I'm not so sure what it is, but I want to be able to respond that in addition to making these changes, we went into the marketplace to see if there were opportunities for us to engage services at some favorable charge to the state that would perhaps get us to a point where 100% every year, all the time, would be covered not only on royalty, but perhaps on the severance as well. So, you know, I would ask that I would put that in the form of a motion and ask for a second on that, directing the staff to go ahead and put that RFI together to see what's out there in the marketplace. I'm aware that companies are using some of these kind of services between themselves because, as you know, companies have to pay royalties to one another based on their transactions, and they have employed some of this. Don't know if it's the right thing for us to do. But with this audit report, I thought it would be a good idea.
So I'll second your motion, Chair.
Motion by Angel, seconded by Sanders. Any discussion, any objections? Hearing none, that motion is adopted. Thank you very much.
I have a question, please, sir. The legislative auditor, this is the response to the legislative auditor's report you just gave us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. With due respect to them, do you believe in their very important function? Do you believe that we have, you and this staff, and ultimately this board, has adequately responded in enough detail to everything they criticized?
I do believe we have.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. That takes care of what was revised item number 8, and then I'll go on to item number 9. You have a PowerPoint up there loaded for me? On 9?
What's 9, Chief?
Is that right?
9 on the agenda, Chief.
We added item 9, which was the state incentive bill.
Legislative update?
No, we added item 8, which was this RFI discussion, this audit, we added a item number 9 by extension, which was the incentive.
Oh, okay. That's what's been hanging over.
But I want to get to resolve next month on this.
I'm still broke, man, but it's stale.
Okay. Okay, so 2 months ago, delivered to you all in advance of a mineral board meeting some background information that spoke to the decrease in the volume of drilling activity in on state-owned lands. Again, the vast majority of our state-owned lands are in South Louisiana. There are things in play in Louisiana right now, in America, that, again, are changing where we drill for oil and gas. So our traditional areas are no longer as traditional, and I think what's starting to happen is the non-traditional stuff is becoming the new normal in America. Having said that, when you take a look again at drilling rig counts, I think we need to do what we can, and this is not about, in my mind, I want to make sure everybody understands, this is not about competing with North Louisiana versus South Louisiana. This is Louisiana competing with the rest of the nation, okay? And so if you think of it, we have three really distinct provinces. We have North Louisiana province, we have the South Louisiana province, and then we have offshore Louisiana, okay? And it is clear to me that for a variety of reasons, most of which are technology, some of them which are regulation, the area where we own our biggest holdings, it has not been as attractive as it had been in decades past. Again, there are a lot of reasons for that. I think we have a duty to respond to that. I have put together a resolution for your review that creates an incentive in state-owned properties. Does require that if in a coastal zone situation, that anybody that takes advantage of this would have a higher level of mitigation requirements. I think it goes, instead of mitigating 100%, give me a second. It was 125%, but I'm having a hard time seeing this right now. So this may not be the final version. So what we're trying to do is make certain that while stimulating activity in the coastal zone, we're not having a negative impact on our environment. So what we would do is the law requires now for a 100% mitigation, we would move forward with, in those areas, if you take advantage of these incentives, you have to mitigate 125%, okay, which I think is appropriate public policy. I may not have the final copy here. Need to make sure. No, I'm sorry. I see it in the last paragraph. To take advantage of the royalty release incentives, the prospective leaseholder shall agree to further compensate the adverse impacts to coastal wetlands in an amount equal to at least 125% of the habitat value of the affected wetlands calculated in accordance with the evaluation method adopted by the Department of Natural Resources. The only thing that remains in my mind for us to pull the trigger on this is to fill in the blanks. I do not think it makes sense for us to incentivize when prices are really, really high. The market ought to be taking care of that. But what I think we ought to do is have a floor that in the event prices were to come down, we can give confidence to investors that you would be entitled to some incentive. And in my mind, it's about, the research that I've done is a $75 per barrel oil and about a $5.50 gas, so that you're entitled to the benefit as long as the price of the commodity is below that. But once it goes above that, we're not going to incentivize it. So when at the beginning, if it's low, it helps get activity, but if it gets above it, it's suspended, and it kind of gives to the marketplace some assurance that it will never go below a certain amount. And we have the constitutional protection in here that never, ever can it be any lower than the constitutional requirements. I'm going to ask the staff to work, direct the staff to work on filling in. You know, again, I'm at the $75 per oil, $5.50 per MBTU of natural gas. We need to verify that, research that, debate it, and I think it's time for us to, at next month's meeting, have this as an agenda item, have a robust debate on it, and decide whether or not we believe the facts are such that we ought to offer some incentive for drilling in these areas that clearly are not meeting the expectations of the marketplace. Oil is $100 a barrel, and we're not seeing the kind of activity that I think we should in those areas, and we need to see if we can do something. Okay? So I don't have a motion on that, but I do just wanted to bring that out to your attention and ask that you take a look and be prepared at next month's meeting to discuss that. Okay? If that's the case, are we ready then to go to originally item 7, which would be announcements? Do we have any announcements?
Yes, sir. We have two announcements. Cash payments for today's lease sale, $4,214,045.83, and that's also the fiscal year-to-date total. The board members each have a copy of the quarterly mineral revenue and production report in their packets.
Any observations on so we closed out the year, the fiscal year, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So you got any observations on this report worth noting? I realize that time is late, but is
I
there?
I can't say that I've actually looked at this report in depth, but information that I prepare for you on a weekly or so basis, I noticed that the last couple of months of the fiscal year, the collections and severance and royalty had improved quite a bit over the prior months.
Okay.
I just rounded it.
All right. Good. Okay, very good. Any other announcements? That's it. Okay, and I'll now go to revise item number 10, which is to consider a motion to adjourn.
Motion by
Segura.
Motion on that, can you?
He did. Motion by Segura.
Second
by Sanders. Any objections? Any discussion? Hearing none. Meeting is adjourned.